Good evening and welcome. This is the regular meeting of the City of Morro Bay City Council. It is Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. We're at Veterans Memorial Hall. It is 5:30 p.m., 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. We do have a quorum of council members present. And with that, I'd like to ask for a moment of silence, please. Thank you. And with that, Councilmember Davis, the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
On three, one, two, three. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you for that. And with that, we will go to our esteemed counselor. Any closed session reports?
No closed session reports, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. We'll go to council members' reports. Who'd like to start us off this evening? Looking.
I'll go.
Okay. Yeah. Councilmember Davis, thank you.
We have started Girl Scout cookie season, and I brought Girl Scout cookies tonight for my colleagues. Because I love my colleagues and I love the Girl Scouts, and who doesn't love cookies? On a slow cog note, our harbor director, Eric, and I are going to meet Thursday afternoon this week with our slow cog representative, John DeNunzio, to see if slow cog can help us work on grant possibilities for a boatyard on our waterfront. There are no guarantees, but they have helped Port San Luis apply for grants in the past. And I will hold office hours this coming Saturday, February 1st. January's gone already. So Saturday, sun and buns from 9 to 10 a.m., office hours, any subject. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis.
Yeah, I don't know if you've all heard, but San Luis Coastal Unified School District is opening the third bilingual school in the county, and it'll be at Baywood Elementary, starting with the kinder class of 2021. And so there's a number of important events coming up, starting with a community forum on February 20th. For anybody in the coastal community, Los Osos or Morro Bay, who's interested in finding out more about bilingual education and opportunities for kinder students. So that's 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Baywood Elementary. And then kinder registration is opening for any child going into elementary school. And that'll be sort of February, March dates for anybody who wants their child to start kindergarten in 2021.
Thank you. Who would like, Councilmember McPherson, announcements?
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Just a couple things to announce. First of all, this is really exciting. The Morro Bay Lions Foundation, in conjunction with Todd's Garage, Bill Todd of Todd's Garage, and our own Community Resource Center, Connections Office, has now given away their 26th car to a very deserving citizen of Morro Bay who was without transportation. And it's such a wonderful program. Either the Lions Foundation, which is a 501(c), buys the car, or you can donate a car and take a tax deduction. And then Bill Todd fixes it up, and I was the lucky person that got to draw the name of the lucky person. So it was given away on Saturday. And then I just also wanted to alert people to the fact that I am the city's representative to the Homeless Services Oversight Council, and in that capacity I was appointed to an encampment subcommittee. And Supervisor Gibson is very interested in trying to do something about the issue of public safety and health in our encampments, and we have them throughout the county. So we're going to be working for the next 6 to 8 months to try to come up with some workable solutions. I don't know if any of you have heard about the Blue Bag Program, but it was a pilot project that was tried in San Luis, the city of San Luis, and they actually cleaned up tons of garbage out of encampments with some volunteers. So it may provide a model, but it's kind of exciting to know that something will be done. So those are my announcements.
Thank you. Thank you for those efforts, too. Councilmember Heller.
I have no announcements, really, but I want to thank everybody for coming out. There are lots of plenty of things you can do on a Tuesday evening. Appreciate you all being here. Thank you.
Great, and a couple of announcements. If you are a member of the Chamber of Commerce, this Friday is their gala event where they give community awards to businesses and individuals that will be recognized. If you aren't a member, there's an opportunity to join and then attend that event. It's this Friday at the Community Center, starting at 5:30. Also, the Air Pollution Control District Board, which I'm a member of, has renewed their fireplace exchange program. If you're looking to exchange your wood-burning fireplace and get a $2,000 credit towards a new gas-burning fireplace, that program has been renewed. And if you would like further information, you can call the APCD and or go to the city website and look up APCD and call their phone number and have availability for that. With that, Mr. City Manager, any announcements, sir?
Just real quickly, the city's joined forces with Monterey Bay Community Power Association, and they're through the, 2 months of enrollment, there's a 98% or higher opt-in rate for our community, which is one of the highest in the entire state. So that demonstrates the good outreach that the MBCP has done, but also the rate savings that come along with being part of that organization. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for that. Tonight we do have a special presentation, and this is a presentation to staff. We are excited tonight to present awards for our fiscal year 2019-20 budget from the Government Finance Officers Association, or GFOA, and California Society of Municipal Finance Officers, CSMFO. The GFOA Distinguished Budget Presentation Award and the CSMFO Operating Budget Excellence Award are conferred upon cities that make significant effort to make their budget documents understandable to decision makers and community members. Applicants for these awards are vetted by finance directors from across California and the nation. These professionals vet budget documents from hundreds and thousands of local governments, sorting out for recognition those relative few that achieve the higher standards in terms of comprehensiveness and ease of use. We should all be proud of these awards. It took several years of hard work and thoughtful input and our Citizen Finance Advisory Committee and city staff to get to this point. With that in mind, I would like to bring forward staff and representatives from CFAC for recognition of this great honor. And I'm going to ask our esteemed city manager and our finance director to meet us at the podium after I read the names of all of the individuals involved in the effort. In attendance tonight are city council members, city manager Scott Collins, city attorney Chris Niermeyer, harbor director Eric Endersby, fire chief Steve Knuckles, Police Chief Jody Cox, Public Works Director Rob Leivick, Environmental Programs Manager Damaris Hansen, Utilities Manager Joe Mueller, City Clerk Dana Swanson, HR Manager Lori Goforth, Planning Director Scott Graham, CFAC Chair Barbara Spagnola, Tourism Manager Jen Little, Finance Director Jen Calloway. Those who were a huge help that couldn't attend tonight, I'd like to read some other names, Sandy Martin, of some of our staff, Sherry Valencia, Tracy McConnell, Valerie Webb, Carly Hartzell, Chloe Budd, Janine Burlingame, Cindy Jason, Herb Edwards, Pam Newman, Mike Wilcox, Matt Bishop, Bonnie Johnson, Kirk Carmichael, Lori Stiltz, and Tracy McConnell. I guess that's like the whole city staff, isn't it? This is a really a fantastic recognition. I would really like to thank Our esteemed city manager, Scott Collins, and our finance director, Jennifer Calloway, for your excellent work. Barbara Spagnola is here from CFAC as well. This is an outstanding award, and I'd like you to meet us down, and I'd like to present that award to you, Mr. City Manager.
Yeah.
Is this working? Yes, it is. This is a California Society of Municipal Finance Officers Certificate of Award for Operating Budget Excellence, fiscal year 2019-20, presented to the City of Morro Bay. Upside down. This is the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada Certificate of Recognition for Budget Preparation to the Finance Department, City of Morro Bay, California.
I just want to thank, as John said, basically the entire city works on this budget, and it's been tremendous success working with our Citizen Finance Advisory Committee. It really came up with some great ideas, and really the leadership of our finance director, when she came in, really turned things around. We were already moving in a good direction, but she's really set us on an amazing path towards success and financial sustainability, so we're very thrilled to receive these awards. Thank you all.
You know, it's a team effort, and it's the entire CFAC, Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. Two of our council members, Ms. McPherson and Ms. Addis, have participated on that, so they know the amount of work that goes into it. Our vice chair, our subcommittee this year was John Martin and Lois Johnson, so we really appreciate this effort, and we plan to continue helping our community achieve the recognition it deserves. Thank you.
All right, that's just excellent. With that, we're going to move to our business spot. I'd like to welcome up Pamela Arsenault from Morro Bay Jewelers. Pamela, welcome. Good to have you here this evening.
Thank you. Good to be here. I opened Morro Bay Jewelers.
A little closer to the mic. Perfect.
I opened Morro Bay Jewelers in 2015. I had worked for Jason Cordero with Traditional Jewelers since 12 years. I began my jewelry history back in 1977 in Ohio. And we owned the Mayflower Atlas truck around town. So between trucking and jewelry, we've been quite a few places. But we have our own in-staff jeweler, so all of the repairs are done in-house, not sent out. We sell new estate and estate jewelry. We also buy jewelry, and we have a local numismatist that works with us on-site for buying and selling coins. Right now, we've just hired a new sales clerk, plus our jeweler, and then in the summertime, the grandson will be coming down and beginning his training to be the jeweler and carry the store forward.
And your location?
We're located on the corner of Main and Harbor, 898 Main Street.
Phone number?
805-772-1878. Our regular hours are Tuesday through Friday, 10 to 5:30. Saturday 10 till 2, and we tell our customers if the lights are on, knock on the door, we're there.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank
and that's
you.
Morro Bay hospitality. When the lights are on, just knock and come
exactly.
on in, right?
Knock at the door, and you know, we have our cell numbers there, so if someone needs us in an emergency, we're available 24 hours a day, basically, because I also go to the nursing homes and care facilities. We cut off quite a few rings from elderly patients and stuff. So we're always available.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
With that, I will open up general public comment. This is for items that are on the agenda for which you can't stay and give public comment during that time, or items not on the agenda. I will start with our speaker slips. First up is Cindy Baton. Cindy, welcome.
See, my overhead is up, so. My name is Cindy Batant, and I'm a volunteer with the League of Women Voters, and I participate on the Voters Edge California website team. I'm here to speak about the website votersedge.org as a valuable source of information regarding the candidates and measures in our upcoming elections, both March 3rd and, of course, then November 3rd for the general election. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization who works to encourage informed and active participation in government. The Voters Edge California website is a joint project of the League of Women Voters Education Fund and MapLight. You can enter your full address or search by county or state. And if you note on my overhead the little red arrows, you can enter your whole address or just drop below and say, look up ballots by county if you want a more general research. On this site, you can get information about when, where, and how to vote. You can view financial information, such as how much money candidates have collected from their top contributors, or monies collected either for or against measures on the ballot. If you do enter your address, you can view your own polling location and hours. You can see everything that will be on your specific ballot, and you can compare candidates' positions side by side. You can also save your choices and print or email it so that you can take it with you on election day. The data that appears on the Voters Edge California comes from a variety of sources, with priority placed on collecting data that is nonpartisan, transparent, and accurate. Voters Edge California does not take any position on or express any preference about the issues or candidates displayed on this site, and neither supports nor opposes candidates or political parties. Sources for the candidate information comes from election authorities, the candidates themselves, and research done by the Voters Edge team. Sources for measure information comes from official government sources, election authority, city auditor, budget office, legislative analyst office, and similar entities. And additional information also comes from the League of Women Voters California Education Fund and the local League of Women Voters pro and con document and the Easy Voter Guide. MapLight obtains campaign finance data from federal bulk files for the federal candidates and from the California Secretary of State for state-level candidates. The Voters Edge website brings a lot of useful information together all in one place, and it's in English or in Spanish. I have left some bookmarks on the back table, also both in English and in Spanish, and help yourself. So I hope it's timed it just right.
Perfect. Thank you, Cindy. Appreciate that. Next up for public comment is Patricia Dale. Patricia, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Patricia Dale of Morro Bay. I've lived here since 2005, and along with approximately 10 other Morro Bay locals, a member of the League of Women Voters. I would like to share with you three events the SLO County League has planned to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, and not by accident, the centennial of the founding of the League of Women Voters. Although I didn't realize it when I joined 14 years ago, our league founder was among the leaders of the suffrage movement of the early 1900s. Carrie Chapman Catt felt that women needed to take their new responsibility seriously and approach the voting booth armed with the information required to be an educated voter. I would like to invite you to our centennial celebration luncheon on February 22, 2020, at the Embassy Suites. We will be featuring Carolyn Jenkins, Jefferson Jenkins, author and former two-term National League president, as well as eighth grade essay contest winners from the Slo County Middle Schools. Professional short documentaries focusing on voting using local residents and league volunteers also will be highlighted. Additionally, we will be honoring our 10 50-year members. And if you're willing to suspend your disbelief for a short time, you'll be meeting Carrie Chapman Catt herself as she discusses the promises and pitfalls facing the league in 1920. In her own words, hopefully you'll pick up the flyer I provided at the back table and get into contact with one of the email addresses at the bottom or register to attend at the Eventbrite site listed. The second event to put on your calendars will be held the last 2 weeks in April at the Slo County Library. The League is co-sponsoring with several community partners a traveling library exhibit, 100 years after the 19th Amendment, their legacy and our future, to be displayed on the second floor of the main library for public viewing. And lastly, our biggest endeavor, an afternoon celebration in Mission Plaza on August 22nd, in conjunction with 20-plus community organizations. Planning started last fall for this comprehensive commemoration of the final ratification of the 19th Amendment, which guarantees all citizens of the United States voting rights, regardless of sex. Speeches, music, food, and general family fun will be featured as we celebrate this significant milestone. So hopefully you'll keep these events in mind as you plan your calendars for the next few months. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up for public comment is Erica Crawford. Welcome, Erica.
Good evening. Happy New Year. I don't think I've seen you since it's been 2020. I'm Erica from the Chamber. Just a few announcements. Thank you very much for the shout-out for our annual gala this Friday. It is, at this moment, sold out. So we have four honorees that we'll be recognizing officially, including Z.M. McCarty as the Student Citizen of the Year, Glenn Siloway as the Citizen of the Year, Jeremiah O'Brien is our Living Treasure of Morro Bay, and San Luis Sports Therapy for Business of the Year. And we have no fewer than 9 restaurants who are contributing to making a one-night-only Taste of the Bay menu. Our second announcement, we are doing a workshop tomorrow, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's a Facebook Lab. It's an interactive, bring your computer. Travis Ford is hosting that. It's at the Inn at Morro Bay. You can just turn up and register, get in there, and learn all the tips and tricks for Facebook. Travis is expert. And then the final announcement, we are doing our Women Making Waves. We're bringing it back for 2020 in conjunction with the anniversary of the women's right to vote. So our next event, the debut of 2020, will be on February 20th. I'm sorry, that's a conflict for that event. But it's exploring female leadership in endurance sports and lifestyle fitness. So some familiar faces from our community include Sandy Twist and Samantha Pruitt and 3 other excellent panelists. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up for public comment is Linda Winters, Mobile Home Linda, as she likes to be known. Welcome.
Good evening. I am Linda Winters, Mobile Home Park Linda. Belated Happy New Year to you all. I didn't speak during the last meeting because we were running a little bit late. I say with a very heavy heart in the light of the tragic event that occurred on Sunday that took 9 lives so suddenly. It makes me realize just how precious every moment we live truly is. I intend to use whatever time I have here in Morro Bay continuing with the efforts we have started almost a year ago in regards to mobile home parks. Back then, I listed goals regarding the mobile home parks. Building a strong line of communication throughout the 15 mobile home parks and the 1,000 residents, that is now happening. we are enjoying a relationship with the city staff and city council members. That sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? Hoping that we can renew and revamp the mobile home Morro Bay rent control ordinance, updating it to keep our mobile home park residents secure and able to stay in their homes for as long as they possibly can. Our mobile home parks are truly Morro Bay's affordable housing. And one of the things we were promoting, and thanks to Cindy's announcement, voter registration and reminding everyone that their vote truly does count. We can only create change with active effort that starts right here at the local level. We have 7,500 plus voters. That's a strong voice. And lastly, came in the mail today, the primary ballot pamphlet. The back page talks about the 2020 census, how everyone is eligible to be counted, regardless of race, color, or creed, or immigration status. We all need to educate everyone how important it is to be counted. We all count. We do have more questions for city staff about the new electric company and the utility rebates, but we can put them in an email. We're truly looking forward to positive actions in 2020, and I'll see all of you on February 11th. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Next up for public comment is John Weiss. Welcome, John.
Good evening. John Weiss, resident, business owner, Morro Bay. I'd like to just simply mention a calendar note. The Maritime Museum has a great guest speaker, actually this Thursday, Captain Evan Barbis of a Merck container ship, which can carry up to $1 billion in cargo, has experience with pirates around the Horn, and many other fascinating stories. I'd suggest you pick up a ticket, if available, by Thursday. Hope you have a good meeting tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Where do we get tickets, John?
The Maritime Museum is located very close to the power plant.
Yes, I mean for our public that is watching TV.
Yeah, very close to the power plant.
Great. Okay,
Thank
thanks. Next up for public comment is Mimi Goldberg. Mimi, welcome.
Hi, City Council and everybody and Eric and Scott. Okay, so I'm here to address the problem that we don't have a warming center. It was really freaking cold last night. It was so cold. I missed my class today. I'm taking environmental science on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Cuesta College. It was so cold. It was so cold. It was really cold. Okay. So please, don't be the last freaking city in our county to get a warming center. I don't understand why you don't believe it's not cold out there and there's homeless people. We need it. And I'm trying to do good. And I really, please, and yeah, I'm a registered Democrat in Morro Bay. And I was a girl that was stabbed in the back with a knife in Cayucas, November 19, 2015. And Andy was a friend of mine. He was stabbed and killed on Saturday. And he was a dear friend. But maybe that wouldn't have happened if we had a warming center. Maybe they wouldn't have been there. Maybe they would have a place with people that help them. And please, it's really cold. Don't wait 6 to 8 months or whatever. No, we need it now. We need it now. And the governor, I called the governor's office. I spoke with the secretary a bunch of times, and then I called the Board of Supervisors. And Hill is working, you know, with, yes. And so, and Bruce Gibson, but please, if we can get this expedited, we really need it. Please and thank you. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you, Mimi. Public comment is still open. This is general public comment for items on the agenda for which you can't stay or any other comments you'd like to make. Welcome, Betty.
My name is Betty Winholtz, Morro Bay. It's interesting to have the league here tonight because my comment is related to that. Both my grandmothers were not able to vote until they were in their late 30s and 40s because the election for federal voting for women didn't happen until 1920, and that was the year my mom was born. So she was able to fully do her ability to vote. And, of course, she instilled that in all us girl children. And I then come then with a heavy heart with this open letter to Councilmember Don Addis as a candidate for State Assembly. So it's a letter I submitted to the Tribune and was not printed, so I'm going to read it here. In light of Morro Bay's last council meeting, it is difficult for me to support the hometown candidate. It is difficult for me to support the female candidate. Mayor Heading relieved Councilmember Addis of her share of council committee assignments, apparently by design, and she did not declined to comment about why she was omitted from those appointments. When she finally did, she implied that having a job limits her time to her commitments to the city. When I was on city council, three of the five council members all held full-time jobs, and we all carried our full weight. As a Slow Women's Marcher founder, I don't understand how equity happens if women aren't present at the table, and those tables are on county committees and city committees. Therefore, you shortchange my representation as a woman when you choose not to fulfill your expected obligations and be on those committees. It's disconcerting that you have declared for office only 1 year into your appointment or into your election into city council. It makes an ambiguous question as to were you using Morro Bay to step up into a higher office all along, or are you really concerned about us? So that is a question that I don't understand. I can't support a candidate who doesn't carry her share of the job, and it seems inconsistent between the words and the deeds that you speak. Thank you.
General public comment is open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or any other items. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm Dan Sedley from Morro Bay. I wanted to talk about a consent item, A7, which was authorizing the city manager to sign a revised non-binding memorandum of understanding between Cayucas Sanitary District, Trust for Public Lands, Chevron, and the City of Morro Bay. Reading the back pages and the fine print, more of my specific concern has to do with, in one place it talks about the Chevron's selling to the TLP, then giving to Morro Bay. And in another place, it talks about Morro Bay purchasing certain parts of this memorandum of understanding. If Morro Bay is purchasing anything in terms of land at this point in time, I obviously have to be concerned because of this city council's statement over and over and over, we don't have any money. We're going into the hole every month. We're spending emergency funds just on our daily uses. If this memorandum of understanding even implies that Morro Bay is going to purchase any land whatsoever, we don't have the money. You've told us over and over and over again it shouldn't be a consideration. If, on the other hand, it is strictly a gift and only a gift, then I don't have that concern. It also talks about there being five lots somewhere on the hillside. It talks about LAFCO annexation agreements, but it talks about five lots that the city wants to sell to build homes on the lower portion so that they're not far up the hill. My question, and it talks about the remainder of the lot, the higher parts of the lot, not being above panorama. But my question is, on these five lots that the city wants to sell, to build homes on, is any part of that above panorama? I'm against any development into the green belt anywhere in our city. The city council talks about land conservancy all the time, and developing our green belt, that just totally goes against what the city council's been talking about, and I'm against it. So I really want clarified how the city proposes to obtain ownership of this property, and if they're paying one dime for it. And if they are, I'm against it, because we've already been there. We've purchased, the Bishop's property, and still haven't been reimbursed for that. The city is not in the business to be a land conservancy. It's not. Whether you believe that or not, the people don't vote to spend money to buy land to leave vacant. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. General public comment is open for items on the agenda for which you can't stay or any other items. Welcome.
My name is Melanie Williams-Mahan. I'm here to talk about the January 14th City Council meeting. The mayor looked down into the audience and asked, if we were lethargic or just tired or not. It was a little strange, but I'm not lethargic, but I am worn down by the seeming apathy over our public comments. I've also been blamed for the holdup of construction on the WRF project, when in fact it was your ineptitude in filing that got you flagged by Fish and Game. All these consultants, staff, and management, yet you all were shut down because you didn't think you had to contact Fish and Game. This snail has been around for years, so pardon me if I seem weary. I am.
Public comment is still open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or any general comments. Welcome, Jeff.
Hello, Mayor, City Council, and people at home and everywhere else. I don't always speak with a loud voice. I'll try and make sure I do that this time. I'm here to confirm that we squared away a museum show and a contest for all of the students in high school. It'll be all the seniors doing self-portraits, and it'll be at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art. The contest was pretty cool. We ended up having 15 high schools participate, starting up at Paso and then all the way down to Napomo. And what will happen is you can maybe kind of see it there, but the students will all be doing self-portraits and learning a little bit more about themselves and education, things like that. One of the things that's going to go on is I'm going to share a little book with all the students. It's this little guide to design that takes into account the 30 years of lessons that I've learned from being in marketing and in the movies. Phrases like "me is we," which is the title of our show, which is no one ever designs anything absolutely by themselves alone. Someone influenced you, fed you, inspired you, loved you, and challenged you. Always remember to share the credit. And it goes on. These little books are made out of one sheet of paper that's all kind of just put together from end to end. So anyway, some fun stuff going on. The first prize is $7,500, which half goes to the teacher and half goes to the student. And so it's a pretty robust contest. Our judges are amazing. We have Erica Crawford. We have Dawn Addis, who are helping out. Many of you didn't know that Dawn started out in art as her main bachelor, and then art education as a second bachelor. So we're learning new things about everybody. One of the things that's going to go on is, in having the students all do their self-portraits, they're going to learn a little bit more about themselves, what they're up to, and things like that. This is an all-volunteer effort. We have got quite a bit of expenses that we've got covered, but if anybody would like to go to our website, the web address, you can just go to the address for the museum, sloma.org, and then just look up "Me for We," and go from there. So I'll put some of the flyers that we have in a press release back on the back table, And thank you very much for helping out. Okay?
Thank you, Jeff. General public comment is still open for any items on the agenda for which you can't stay or any other comments. Seeing none, I will close public comment. And Dan, will you be staying for A7 or would you like a response now on your questions? Okay, I'll go ahead and pull that then. Thank you. Let's see. Thank you for all the announcements of the items and the programs that are happening here. I believe Councilmember McPherson gave an update on the warming center issue, but if you'd like to make a comment from Ms. Goldberg.
Well, we are still working on that, and a new round of funding is coming up here with the grant requirements being set in March, and we do intend to apply, and we've been given every indication that we will get funded this round. So we are hoping to have it in place by next winter, but unfortunately not this winter. It just doesn't happen that fast.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Looking, seeing none? Okay, that brings us to our consent agenda. I'll open up public comment for any items on the consent agenda for which you'd like to now speak. That includes item A1 through A8. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you. I'd like to address A4, A5, and A7. I'd like to thank the mayor for his response or staff's response to my comments about having some kind of timeline. I think that's real important for us to understand. I would agree that we need to have that sent out to people, but I would also encourage you to make it part of this document so people can find it when they lose it. And you know that we lose things that come in the mail. I do have, and I appreciate your taking care of the definitions and the time cycle.
Betty, I'm sorry, is that A4?
That was A4.
That was A4, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I want to move on to A5. I don't know if you know how unique it is for our town to have wild raptors living in our neighborhoods, night herons nesting in our parks, and a great horned owl hanging out on Morro Bay Boulevard, or he used to. This is part of the quality of life that has been a small town. Our predecessors knew the specialness decades ago and tried to protect our habitat with the label Bird Sanctuary and Tree City. Not anymore. Now it is one of the more hypocritical acts this city performs, imaging to ourselves and visitors that we are a tree city and bird sanctuary. If the public trees across the street from my house hadn't been, quote, trimmed today, I would not be addressing this issue. The red-tailed hawk that showed up a week ago didn't know he was supposed to wait until the coming weekend, but he was flying over the nesting trees as a tree company was cleaning and thinning out its branches before the official deadline. 8 vultures joined him, and they circled and circled and circled as these men cut down the branches. If we are serious about birds and trees, we would exercise precautionary judgment when granting a permit days before nesting season starts. Trees should be trimmed, but earlier than 3 days before the deadline to avoid harm. Please allow staff some discretion on the precautionary side. And finally, regarding A7, this is also on the Chevron property, and I appreciate knowing that the size of these 5 lots are actually in acres, ranging anywhere from 33 to 57 acres apiece. And I understand that now that Chevron will be the agency that is supposed to convince the public to vote for annexation, it won't be the city. But I did not get a response in terms of what size of ADUs will be allowed, since these are acres. And will it be the normal 900-square-foot secondary unit? But I think not. So I'd like some clarification on that. And I think, again, that in order to protect the dog beach, which does not need to be linked to the exchange with the annexation, and to protect our view shed, that no action needs to be taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for items on the consent agenda. Anybody wishing to come forward, please do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment for consent. I will pull item A4 and A7. Any others? No, then I will entertain a motion for approval of A1, 2, 3, 5, 6, and 8.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember McPherson and seconded by Councilmember Davis for approval of all items on the consent agenda except for A4 and A7. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Mayor Heading.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. First of all, A4, Ms. Calloway, can you give us an update regarding clarification on this policy and exactly what you're planning to do to make it a little bit easier to understand for our community?
Sure. So this policy is the result of Senate Bill 998 for discontinuation of water service for non-payment. It sets out a timeline for notification to customers of when they will potentially be shut off if payment is not received. It provides for allowances for those that cannot pay and defines clearly what that means and the criteria that has to be met, and also allows for alternative payment arrangements if that assists the customer who's having challenges paying. A lot of those options, such as promises to pay and payment extension policies, the city had already adopted. We did not have as an extended period for waiting to discontinue water service, so we've adjusted our timeline. And we're providing at least two additional notifications, one by mail and a phone call right before the discontinuation. So should a customer not pay their water bill, not be able to demonstrate that they are unable to pay, not successfully file an appeal with the city manager and the finance director to review, then we would call them at least 24 hours before shutting off their water service, and that's after mailing two letters indicating that they're in potential danger of being discontinued and posting a notice at the residence or at the utility address. So we've outlined that. The dates are confusing given that we have to work back from delinquency and when the bills are issued. So we did avoid putting in specific dates for that reason. I do understand that it can be challenging to read through this and decipher what those are, so certainly willing to put a timeline in all of the notifications that we send out, as well as post that on our website where the policies are so it can be easily found. In addition, we do encourage all of our customers, if they're having trouble to pay, to come in. The sooner they come in, the more help we can offer them, because it prevents the bills from getting so out of control that it's really overwhelming. So, and all of our notifications will be emphasizing to come in sooner rather than later and not wait the 90 days.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Winholtz, for the clarification on that confusion that appeared in the policy, and thank you, Ms. Calloway, for addressing that. Any questions of Ms. Calloway? If not, I will move approval of A4.
Second.
Motion by Mayor Heading for approval of A4, seconded by Councilmember McPherson. Any further discussion? Not the roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. And A7, I pulled because of the comments that were made. First of all, Mr. Sedley, thank you for your comments. Ask Mr. Graham if he will address the issues raised by Mr. Sedley, specifically requiring a response to the issue of will there be any payment made by the city to acquire land. Secondarily, what would be the cost of land if there is anything that would be acquired by the city. He also indicates, quote-unquote, that the city wants to sell to build homes on the property, and maybe some clarification about the ownership there with Chevron. And are these five lots that are being considered above the panorama, I guess I'll call it plain? And then Ms. Winholtz had additional clarification with regard to the size of the ADUs, if we know that, and would like clarification for that. Thank you.
Certainly. So we'll start with Mr. Sedley's comments. The city is not paying any money for the purchase of the lots. The lots will be acquired by the Trust for Public Lands from the Cayuga Sanitary District and then conveyed to the city through a purchase agreement / donation agreement and conveyed via deed to the city. So we won't be paying any money as it relates to purchasing the lots. As it relates to the lots, the five lots above Panorama, those lots exist. They're owned by Chevron. We would be through this process. There's other items that would come to the council at future meetings to outline a change in sphere of influence to include the Panorama lots. With those documents would come a limitation on where homes could be placed. And so we'd have a single home on each lot, and they would be located toward the bottom of those lots, preserving the backdrop of the city, meaning bottom of the lots towards the existing homes that sit on at the top of Panorama in the current development state along that street. Moving on to the question raised by Ms. Winholtz about ADUs. Yes, ADUs would be allowed there. Legislation that recently took effect, AB 881, basically allows ADUs in any residential zone in association with any residential development with very few limitations. Currently, the maximum limitation or size for an ADU could be up to 1,200 square feet. So that would be the maximum size of an ADU in those locations. The limitations that are placed on this as it relates to our discretionary authority for, you know, approving or denying those things would really hinge on whether there was sewer and water capacity issues in the city, whether there was health, life, safety issues in, you know, approving development in those locations, and whether there was traffic impacts related to approving those types of things. The city could have some discretion related to those, but you'd have to make findings related to that if you were denying accessory dwelling units in those locations.
Great. Thank you for answering those questions. Any further questions of Mr. Graham?
I have a kind of a general question. Maybe
sure.
Mr. Neumeier can answer it. Can you explain to me the non-binding MOU issue and what we're not binding, or just explain that to me a little bit?
It basically means what it says, insofar as the city has no legal obligation to follow any of the conditions in this MOU, nor do any of the parties. It's simply a roadmap that the parties have drafted to follow, but it's non-binding, meaning that if we tomorrow didn't want to do any of the things in here, there's no legal recourse for the other parties to bring against us.
Okay, thanks.
Any further questions? If not, I'll move approval of A7.
Second.
Motion by Mayor Heading to approve A7, second by Councilmember Davis, and roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great, thank you. That brings us to business item C1. This is a review of the WRF Capital Project Quarterly Update Report and potential modification of the report. Also, review of roles of the Public Works Advisory Board, PWAB, Citizens Finance Advisory Committee, CFAC, regarding the WRF and adopt resolution number 08-20, authorizing a budget adjustment for temporary part-time staffing to assist with records management for the project. With that, giving you time to set up, I'll turn it over to Mr. Casares for presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Eric Casares, the city's WRF program manager. Thank you for having me here tonight to present on item C1, which is a review of the WRF quarterly update report. Couple of items we're asking for here this evening. One is that you receive the Water Reclamation Facility Project Quarterly Update Report, review some of the recommendations from the recent CFAC meeting regarding modifications to the quarterly report content. Review and provide direction regarding the roles of PWAB and CFAC in regards to the WRF. And then the fourth item, I will pass it back over to Mr. Collins, City Manager, to address. In terms of the quarterly report overview, Just a quick item that I like to highlight every time we go over these reports. The program manager produces a single report for CFAC and City Council each month, which is tracking of actual expenditures that are incurred on a monthly basis. That monthly report is expanded every third month and comes to you at the close of the quarter with a expanded presentation like we are here tonight. In other months, that report goes into onto consent for you to review. The budget and schedule are rebaselined annually at the end of the fiscal year. So the last baseline of the budget and schedule was done on July 1st of 2019, or essentially the end of June of 2019. A high-level summary of the project status. One, the project is currently on budget. The new budget that you'll see in the quarterly report is in line with the original $126 million budget that was adopted in the middle of 2018 and was the basis of the 2018 rate study and the subsequent rate increase. Several major elements of the project are behind schedule, and I'll go into some of those things as we discuss here further. Overall, the project is behind schedule because of these different elements being the different project elements being behind schedule, but we're not at risk currently of missing our TSO compliance. And just as a recap, the TSO that the city received in mid 2018 from the regional board regarding new discharge requirements requires the new facility be in operation and meeting the new discharge requirements by February 28th of 2023. Based on our current schedule, we anticipate substantial completion of the water reclamation facility, and since being in compliance with those new discharge requirements by the middle of April of 2022. The next slide here is essentially a breakdown of some of the budget history. If you look over at the furthest left-hand column there, you'll see the original budget of about $125.9 million. That was, again, the numbers that were used as a basis of the rate study. And then the quarterly budget reconciliations that have occurred since that time, and as well as the annual baseline budgets. The current budget, as of this last budget reconciliation that happened at the end of December, is $125.9 million. In regards to kind of a comparison of the previous two budget reconciliations, the one that was done at the end of Q1 of fiscal year 1920 and the one done at the end of Q2 fiscal year 1920, really in terms of the water reclamation facility component of the project, there were minimal changes. For the conveyance and recycled water facilities, there were some things that were added in terms of some additional biological monitoring and avoidance measures that have resulted as a result of the consultation work that we've been going through with U.S. Fish and Wildlife regarding the California red-legged frog. The addition of some pre-construction testing and archaeological monitoring work, again, that came out of some work that we were required to do because of our federal funding with the State Historic Preservation Office. Actually, item C2 after this item will address some of those issues. And then in terms of the general project cost or the general program cost, minimal changes in terms of that budget item. A couple of the major milestones that occurred over the last 3 months, and again, this would be the period of October, November, or December of 2019. It was a delivery of the draft programmatic agreement to SHPO, and actually the receipt of the final executed agreement from SHPO as well. Receipt of the fully executed coastal development permit after meeting the conditions that were identified by the Coastal Commission, we received that executed permit. Execution of the permit purchase agreements with the Tri-W property and right of entry agreement with the Shepherd Trust. Again, these are the land acquisition needs that we haven't we had to meet in order to begin the start of construction at the wharf site. We continue development of the 90% design deliverable for the water reclamation facility. So while we've had some delays, we've continued the design of that facility. We have identified some additional potential change orders as a result of a number of different items. Some of them contractual, others are process related, other changes that have been initiated by the city that will result in some additional PCOs that we'll have to be bringing to PWAB and council in the future that will have a cost impact to the existing project reserves that we have set aside. In terms of the conveyance facilities portion of the project, we're also continued development of that 90% design there, anticipating that the 90% design for that element of the project will be done in late January, early February, so in the next week or two. One of the challenges that we have is expediting completion of the final design so we can get that portion of the project out to bid. As you'll remember, there were some issues previously with some land that we need to cross in order to complete our pipelines and access to that property to do the proper design-related activities set the schedule back by several months. Similarly, on the recycled water facilities, the work on that portion of the project, the injection wells, has slowed in recent months, again, because of issues in accessing property to get the proper work done on the hydrogeological side. This is the project dashboard that you'll see at the beginning of the report. All of the items there in green are in good shape. I will address the two items there in yellow. The first one is the schedule performance index. Again, a schedule performance index of 1 or greater means the project is on schedule. Current schedule performance index is 0.92, so hence the yellow. As I mentioned previously, a number of items are behind schedule. Overall, we are still not in risk of not meeting the TSO compliance. And then one specifically related to compliance date countdown is the last item on the list, which is yellow. We've been tracking the compliance date to the TSO date of February 28th, 2023, and we've been trying to maintain, in order to maintain a green status, we would have a lag of 365 days or a calendar year, and we're just starting to encroach on that 365 days. Right now, our lag has been reduced to about 325 days based on the current quarterly report. This graph here shows cash flow, projected cash flow for the project. The red is the forecasted expenditures for the project as of the beginning of July of 2019, so when we went through that budget reconciliation. And the solid and dashed blue line there is essentially the actual expenditures and projected expenditures. You can see this kind of blue tail sticking out here. So this is essentially, based on the delays that I discussed previously with the hydrogeo work, the completion of the injection wells will extend out several more months based on what we projected in July of 2019. Again, the important thing to look at in terms of TSO compliance and compliance with the regional board's requirements are the two diamonds there. The red diamond shows our TSO compliance we anticipated in July of 2019, and the blue shows the compliance that we anticipate as of the development of this quarterly report. So that shifted out a couple of months. The next table up here shows the expenditures to date. The column to the left shows the actual expenditures to date based on the consultant contracts that the city has initiated. So just about $13.5 million. Total expenditures are approximately $15.5 million for all costs, including all city costs, property acquisition, and all of those elements. Again, the second column to the right shows the total project cost estimated at completion, which is the $125.9 million that we discussed earlier. The next graph shows the schedule performance. That's in the report. You can see a little bit more detail in the report. What I'll just draw your attention to are the two numbers kind of at the bottom of the slide. One is that project SPI, so looking at the overall project, how is it performing to schedule? Again, on schedule would be 1 or higher, and we're currently at a 0.92. And then program percent complete is about at 66% complete. This table up here is an addition that we made to the report in terms of milestones, and we have flushed out the milestone schedule to show additional milestones as they relate to the individual components of the project. So elements like the beginning of construction, substantial completion, and final completion have been identified and included in the report. For easy viewing for the water reclamation facility, the conveyance facilities, and the recycled water facilities. As I mentioned, really our biggest risk at this point in time is schedule and trying to get back to our baseline schedule that we set in July of 2019. And there's a couple of elements that we need to address in order to get back onto that schedule. One is in terms of some of the general permitting activities. We're currently working on a permit for both the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the encroachment permit for Caltrans. Again, these are directly related to the conveyance facilities portion of the project. We need to have these permits in hand before we can start construction on that element of the project. That's scheduled for the summer of 2020. In terms of another permitting activity that we've fallen behind on a little bit is the potable reuse permitting. Essentially, we're just continuing and ramping up our work on a couple of the critical elements for that. One is the enhanced source control program, which is essentially the city's new pretreatment program that will need to be implemented in the future to support the potable reuse activities. And then the other one is the development of the Title 22 engineering report, which needs to accompany any recycled water project. Really, the critical item holding that back is the completion of the hydrogeological work that we've discussed previously. That's been delayed. And then funding. As you all know from our last meeting, we are in very good shape in terms of finalizing the agreement with the EPA WIFIA program for about half of the project funding. The other half of the project funding, Clean Water SRF, they are moving ahead with their environmental review, and they are chomping at the bit as much as we are to continue their review so that we can get an agreement negotiated and finalized with them. So we're trying as much as we can to expedite that process for them. That's the quarterly report overview. Just a couple of other quick items that wanted to address before we get into questions and discussion. One is the CFAC recommendations. So over the last couple of CFAC meetings, there's been discussions about some changes to the quarterly report. The staff report makes mention of some specific items that CFAC approved for you to consider here tonight in terms of changes to the report. Most of it is centered around what we're calling table number 3. It would be a table that would be inserted into the quarterly report, the quarterly and monthly reports, which essentially brings the number of the tables that are in the report together so they're a little bit easier to see, kind of see the bigger picture all in one table. The critical element is really this last column, which is the estimate at completion. We give the estimate at completion in terms of that $125.9 million is essentially, that's our estimate at completion in terms of what we project the cost of the project will be when the project is done. But there are some specific elements that CFAC has asked for where they want to more easily be able to see the estimate at completion for specific contracts, mainly the program management contract, the design-build contract, and some of the other consultant contracts. So this example table is what they would like to see added to the report. One of the other elements that they addressed is that they believe by adding this table, we can also simplify and reduce a couple of subsequent tables, mainly tables 7, 8, 9, and 10 in the quarterly report. The other discussion item here that was in the staff report is really the roles of CFAC and PWAB and something that we wanted to highlight for discussion this evening. So in terms of the roles of CFAC and PWAB and why this was broached in the staff report. At the last meeting of CFAC several weeks ago, they began asking clarifications about their role as it relates to the water reclamation facility. The finance advisory role for the water reclamation facility was originally assigned to CFAC in January 2019, and that role was adjusted or refined a little bit throughout the beginning of 2019. Also, WRFCAC was dissolved in December of 2019, and the responsibilities of the WRF in terms of the technical elements of the WRF project were assigned to PWAB. Just in summary, before I hand it off to the other side here, recommendations here tonight are, one, to receive the Water Reclamation Facility Project Quarterly Update Report, review the recommendations of CFAC for modification of the Quarterly Update Report, and review and provide direction regarding the roles of PWAB and CFAC going forward regarding the Water Reclamation Facility. With that, I'll pass it to Mr. Collins.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. And just briefly touch upon the PWAB and CFAC real quick. So CFAC does perform a very important role in reviewing the quarterly reports prior to City Council's review. I think the clarification CFAC is trying to seek is just exactly what the expectation is in terms of reviewing that. Do they want to submit comments? Do you want recommendations? You simply want to receive and file? You know, from staff's vantage point, these are somewhat complicated reports, and having folks with financial acumen and background and experience representing the community on another body is a vital function in of itself. So that could stand alone. However, council could choose to add more responsibility and review to the CFAC. With regard to the WRFCAC was created in approximately 2014 with the overarching goal to help assist in the city in the pursuit of alternative locations, suss those out, the technology to be brought forward in that system, as well as reclamation options. And by and large, they help satisfy that. Where there may be disagreement about the ultimate outcome along those three areas, they did perform a very important function in providing recommendations, and City Council ultimately moved forward in those three areas and have made decisions on those. So WRFCAC has performed a very admirable service to our community. In addition to those three areas, they also were another conduit for community to provide input to decision makers. PWAB can continue on in regard to the opportunity for community input, as well as looking at the major components that are remaining on the technical side, primarily when contracts are brought forward for the pipeline conveyance system, as well as the injection well system. The PWAB has provided monthly updates about the general functions of public works. The WRF is provided in each of those updates already, so we think that's important to continue and then bring forward items, standalone items for the WRF when there's something to recommend to City Council. So just wanted to clarify that's sort of where staff sees it, but this is council's decision, and so we just wanted to make sure there was clarity about where we stand today. The last remaining item here is regarding records management staffing needs. The city admits that we need to improve drastically in how we address our records. There are a significant number of records created through this project going back many, many years. We are trying to do our best to bring those online to make them very searchable for our community members, so you don't have to take up Dana's time when she has many other functions to perform. So we think there's an obvious win for the community, for those who are seeking records that they should have access to, as well as for staff to be able to perform their high-level functions, that if we bring somebody on a temporary basis to help make sense of all the records, put it in a logical manner on our website so that folks in the community can search easily, that is worthy of the investment of about $13,000 or $13,500, 20 hours a week until the work gets done. For the remainder of the year, maybe into next year. If we need to go into next year, obviously it will be a budget discussion for fiscal year 2021. So with that, our recommendation is to do that, and we think that will help everybody in that case. Just to note, there's been 60 public records requests have been submitted, I don't know how, in the last couple months, since July 1st. So that's a significant number to respond to. And again, I think that could be helped if the records are easily found for members of our public. That's all.
Okay. Thank you both for that report. With that, I will open it up to any questions that council may have at this time. Would like to start us off? Seeing none.
Okay.
No questions.
All right.
To my
no.
left. Councilmember McPherson, thank you.
Okay, I'll start off. I really don't have very many questions, but just a couple. First of all, Eric, this report goes through December 31st. Could you just give us kind of a high-level summary of what's happened in January, just bring us up to date so that anything major that has happened in the last month that we should know about on any aspect of the project, land purchases or the red-legged frog or anything else?
Yeah, I can answer a couple of those questions. So there's probably three key items that I'd want to highlight. The first one is in regards to the land acquisition. The escrow has closed on the Tri-W property, so that's a big milestone for the project. That's good news. The not-so-good news is, in December of last year, we made an ask to Fish and Wildlife for them to try and expedite their process in terms of the Section 7 consultation that we were required to do. We had asked for them to issue the biological opinion by January of 2022. January 22nd. We sit here January 28th, and we have not received that biological opinion yet. And we are still working with them to get that biological opinion. So the timeline that we were hoping for in terms of a closing of the environmental process by the end of the month is looking like it's pushing out several weeks. So that's a little disappointing. We actually received additional questions from Fish and Wildlife last Friday, sent responses to those questions yesterday to the EPA for them to get them to Fish and Wildlife. So now we're sitting and waiting for the next request that they have, but they still understand the importance of us expediting this process and getting through it so we can start construction. So that's an important element. I think the next important element is on the hydrogeological work. So that was something that I had mentioned earlier as being a challenge in 2019 in terms of actually accessing the property to do the work, the pump testing work needed to really determine the optimal injection location. The question that we've been asking, is it west or east? Where will those injection wells be located? Happy to say that the pump testing on the west side is ongoing now, and we should be able to answer that question of west or east by the end of February.
Thank you. Just to follow up to the red-legged frog issue, it's my understanding, and I think it's important to point this out, really we are not dealing directly with U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Is that correct? We have been asked by our funding source, EPA, to let them handle those negotiations and that process. Is that correct?
That's correct. The Section 7 consultation is a federal agency-to-federal agency communication. And so we initiated, along with the EPA, initiated that contact with Fish and Wildlife in the end of June, beginning of July of 2019. They have 90 days to respond. We did not get a response back from them until the third week in October, and that response indicated that they did not agree with all of EPA's recommendations, hence our recommendations through EPA.
Right. So in a sense, this is a disagree, because EPA still absolutely wants to fund us, correct? So they are on our side in this, and they are trying to expedite the process with U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Absolutely. I think the EPA is hopeful as we are that this process gets resolved as quickly as possible.
If I could add to that, the California red-legged frog is delaying the South SLO County Sanitary District wastewater remodel project under very similar kind of conditions where they thought they were all done and kind of get the last-minute letter that now we disagree with the findings, and therefore we need to do some more consultation. So that hit their project late 2019 as well, and they're still working through the process.
Right. And the only reason that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is even looking at this is because we are getting the federal funding.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Just another question here. Does the TSO with the water board require recycling by a certain date?
No. The TSO requires the facility to be in compliance with the secondary treatment standards to the ocean.
All right. And are there any other time limits placed on this project by any of our funding sources in terms of meeting a schedule, or is it?
No, the only other real schedule issues are the TSO itself has some intermediate schedule requirements. So while they have the ultimate deadline of February 28th of 2023, between now and that deadline, they have some interim milestones for activities such as the start of wharf construction, the start of conveyance facilities construction, and we update them on a quarterly basis with a report that we send to the regional board that's required by the TSO, so they are aware of the project status.
Okay. And I noticed in the full report here you mentioned that you were going to distribute an e-newsletter to all the businesses on Quintana by the end of this month. Is that still on track?
We're still working with our public outreach folks, and they're working to get that done and get that out to folks to let them know what's going on.
So hopefully that'll be soon.
Correct.
Okay. And then I also have a question for you, Mr. Collins, and that concerns... I certainly appreciate what you had to say, but I'm very curious to know about these 60 requests that we've had. Are they all from different people? I mean, we see a lot of those, and it would appear that there is at least one individual that has sent multiple public records requests, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that the city can do about that, since my understanding is this person isn't a citizen, doesn't even live in the state. So I'd like to kind of know, is there something the city can do? Can we charge harassment for?
You want to direct that question to the city attorney as far as the legalities. But, I mean, for the most part, it's a wide range of individuals who are submitting public records requests, which is their right to do. There may be some that do quite a more frequently than others. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I just noticed one that wanted records back to like 2003 or 7. It was an incredible request that it would be hard to imagine that any city could comply with that.
Councilmember McPherson, in regards to
whether or not the city can challenge what might be characterized as excessive PRAs, generally the city cannot. The right of the public to access records of City Hall under the Public Records Act is broad. The city has an obligation to just, with all due diligence, to go through the PRAs that are received. When there's a large volume of Public Records Act requests, PRARs, the city reasonably is not expected to turn them around within a few days. It just depends on the volume that come in, but they're... except in very rare circumstances, is there an ability of the city to deny a PRA on that the individual that is submitting it has submitted too many?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I think Councilmember Heller, you had some questions, sir?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
I got some new glasses. Please excuse me if I'm peering over the top because I got readers and I really should have gotten the other kind so that I could look at you at the same time. But so I read this report, all 45 pages. And I see a note in here regarding the WRF design package, the 90% package, that you're expecting in early 2020. Do you have a date when you actually expect to receive that, or does that mean the end of this month or end of March, or when?
As of the development of this report, we were looking at the middle of February, the first couple weeks of February. We are still working through a couple of design changes that would have an impact on the 90%, but before the end of February is what we anticipate for the 90%.
Okay. And then, so escrow is closed on the property. Do you intend to break ground before the 90% is delivered? I see a note here that you're going to start in February or March.
Yeah, so we're intending to break ground. Really, the only thing holding us back from breaking ground right now is getting the biological opinion from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So in terms of kind of the critical path items right now, we're sitting here waiting for the biological opinion from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Once we receive that biological opinion, we've got indication from the two funding agencies that they need to close their environmental process before we can start construction. And so they've indicated it would be about a week behind receipt of the biological opinion from the service before they can close their environmental process. At that point in time, we can start construction. Theoretically, we could start construction right now. The only reason why we can't start construction is because of the federal dollars and these additional requirements that we have.
So the whole Fish and Wildlife biological opinion piece has to be resolved before you can put a shovel in the ground. Is that right?
Before we can do anything out there at all.
And we're really not sure how long that's going to take. I like your optimism, but I'm not sure that what if that doesn't happen?
Well, there's some the law has some guidelines on that. There's two different kinds of consultation. We've decided to, through the direction of EPA, who's the lead agency, to go with the formal consultation pathway, which has a time limit of 135 days. There is some discrepancy about when that 135 days starts. We essentially had made a request that would have given them approximately 90 days from when we believe the clock started to January 22nd when we were asking them to be completed. So there is a timeline on this. It is not a blank check, if you will, and there is a set time when this needs to be done.
Then you mentioned critical path. Is there, I read this thing about two times, believe it or not. Is there a critical path schedule in this report?
There is. We do not include the detailed critical path schedule in the report, which is one of the items that I was remiss, I should have mentioned, that was discussed at CFAC, is including some more schedule information in there. When the report was originally developed, we use a critical path schedule to manage the project. What we report out in these quarterly reports are the critical milestones, essentially. That's what was developed and put forward in the original report. CFAC has asked for some additional detail in terms of a critical path schedule, and that's something that has been discussed in terms of we have it and it can be provided. It's currently not provided in the quarterly report.
And clarify that CFAC, a few members have requested that, but that was not a formal recommendation from CFAC.
Thank you.
So for those of you who don't know what a critical path schedule is, I think it's important to understand the importance of them. If you were going to build a house and a contractor said, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, but contractor said, I'm going to build this house for you in a year. And the owner says, well, how do I know that we're on schedule? And the contractor will say, okay, I've got 1 month to put in the foundation, 2 months for framing, this for the next, and so forth and so on. And there's sequential events. And so you know if the contractor, if the project is on schedule, if those specific dates are being met. And is that a fair explanation, reasonable explanation?
Yeah, that's a good explanation. Our critical path schedule runs, the end of our critical path is essentially the TSO compliance date. We have other activities that are being accomplished, kind of some ancillary activities like the injection wells that are not on the critical path, mm-hmm. but our critical path runs to that TSO compliance date of February 28th.
Okay, so I read this report and maybe I missed it, but I don't see a critical path schedule with milestones that lead to the TSO date. Specifically, I don't see anything about the Fish and Wildlife piece. I don't see anything about due date of the piping design project, which you note in one of these tables here that it's at risk and might drive the project beyond the TSO date. So I appreciate your optimism, but in looking at this, you know, I see some issues.
So just to clarify, we do have a critical path schedule that we use to manage, and we are just reporting out the details from that critical path schedule.
So where can I find that in the report?
It's not in the report.
Okay. So this is something I've had multiple conversations with our city manager about, and I've talked about it in several council meetings for a year. And for this project, considering what you're paying your firm, and I don't want you to take this personally, but for this project, for what we're paying this consultant, to not have a critical path schedule in it, which is program management 101.
Did you have a question, Councilmember
Heller? My question is, why does it not have this here after all my discussions with the city manager and talking about in these meetings? Why is it not in these reports?
It could be added to the reports if directed by council.
Okay. Let's move on here to my next question. So the sewer plant project, you have on table one, which is on page 61, Eric, you have a table that has title is Project Accomplishments and Challenges, and there are three columns in that table. The first column identifies critical challenges. The second column is actions to overcome the challenges. And the third column is likely outcomes. I'm sure you're familiar with the one I'm talking about. So
yeah.
For the WRF, and when we talk about WRF in this project, we're talking about the sewer plant only, right, unless we say WRF program. But the WRF project is the sewer plant only, and I want the public to understand this. So critical challenges is, it says here, additional PCOs, which is a proposed change order. That's a change order which the owner has the right to reject if they don't like it or if they don't want to do that work. That's what a proposed change order is. So critical challenge, additional PCOs have been identified, okay? And if you may remember, some PCOs have already been approved by the council, but apparently there are more coming. And this is on the guarantee.
Do you have a question?
I do have a question. If you let me get to it.
I would appreciate it.
I'd appreciate you giving time to talk about this with $126 million on the line here.
Thank you.
Next column is actions to overcome this challenge. The city needs to critically evaluate the need for the PCOs. So my question is, we've got a team here, city manager, Carollo Engineering, Mr. Leivick, who on that team makes the decision when you refer to the city. Who is that?
I do. I make the recommendations. They go forward to PWAB, I guess, in this case, and then ultimate decision-making is by city council.
Okay. Thank you for that. I did not know the answer to that. Last time I brought it up, I couldn't seem to get an answer. The likely outcome to this, if you can't overcome the challenges, will lead to an increase in the guaranteed maximum price. Am I looking at that correctly, Eric?
That's correct.
Okay. So my question to you, and perhaps to the whole team, is what is your understanding of what a guaranteed maximum price means?
In this context, in the agreement that was executed with the design build team, the guaranteed maximum price is the maximum price that that firm will be paid to do the work that's included in that agreement. So there is a very specific scope of work included in the design-build agreement. We refer to it as Exhibit B in that agreement, which identifies exactly what the guaranteed maximum price is paying for.
Okay, so are these proposed change orders things that the management team is asking, that the city is asking for, or were these issues with the bid documents that were developed by the team and bid out, put out to bid?
There's a couple of different categories that we're dealing with in terms of the potential change orders. One category is there are some contractual requirements in terms of when construction was to start. We've missed that the dates when construction was supposed to start because of issues with the Section 7 consultation. So the design build team is able to come back to the table to ask for more money in terms of escalation and delay costs. So that will be included as a PCO that will come to PWAB and council. We're also dealing with additional costs from Fish and Wildlife in terms of the red-legged frog. We're going to use our environmental allowance that's included in the project, but likely some PCOs that we bring to PWAB and council will be as a direct impact to the red-legged frog and the avoidance measures that we're adopting in order to be in compliance with the services request. There's also a number of items that we've identified that were not originally addressed in the request for proposals, and so they weren't addressed, they weren't included in the design build team's original proposal. So those are items that we've identified because of a number of different reasons that we will present when we bring this back to PWAB and council. And then the other element is we've done some additional water quality analysis and we've done some additional data gathering that shows that we need to make some changes to the project that have cost impacts as well, so things that were not foreseen. So those are kind of the major categories of the change orders, or excuse me, the PCOs that will come to council for consideration.
Okay. Moving on to page 62, table 1, it's the same kind of table, project accomplishments and challenges, three columns, but it's referring to the piping project, which is, so the projects, the program has been divided into three projects, the sewer plant on the hill, the piping project, and the recycled water project. So this table refers to the conveyance facilities. Critical challenges, expediting completion of the final design. Can you tell me what expediting the completion means?
So there's a couple of things that we're doing. One, we're pushing the design team as hard as we can for them to get the design done.
And how do you do that?
We are looking at ways to eliminate some of the deliverables potentially. So we have a 90%, 100% and a bid set submittal. We're looking at getting rid of one of those submittals to reduce the review time and be able to get it to us quicker. And so we can get it to bid faster.
Is the city going to get money back from this consultant if you eliminate what they're contractually obligated to supply?
They are paid on a time and materials basis. So we will look at essentially it's a similar amount of work, so there may be some cost savings there depending on the deliverable that
we eliminate. So you mean to tell me for designing the pipeline and the pumps that connect the existing sewer to the new sewer plant, it's not a fixed price contract? It's time and materials, pay as you go?
It's a time and materials not to exceed contract, yes.
Not to exceed. Okay. Is there any language in the contract that the city has with this designer that gives us leverage? Are there penalties? Are there specific deliverable due dates? Tell me about that contract that we have with them.
There are requirements, but I would say that the reason why we are behind schedule on this element of the project, it's not at any fault of the design engineers. It really comes down to the city, and it would be saying it's the city's fault necessarily, but it's the property access issues. So we were set back significantly in 2019 because we couldn't get onto the Vistra and PG&E properties to do the geotechnical borings and the surveying work that we needed to push the design forward. So those are the reasons for the delays, not because of any fault of the design engineer.
Okay, and then your intention is to complete those documents whether or not you have the easements in place?
That's correct. We likely could take that project to bid before we have all of the easements in place.
And you're 100% convinced you're going to get the easements in a reasonable amount of time and won't delay the project?
We have a strategy right now for both the easements for the PG&E property. There's a process that's in place as well as a process that we're going through with the Vistra company.
Okay. It bothers me, frankly, that you're eliminating intermediate design deliverables. I mean, I don't understand that. Are you even getting specifications from this team?
We are getting specifications from this team.
And do you feel you're exposing the city to any risk by eliminating some of these deliverables?
I don't believe so. If I had been the one to develop the scope of work for the design engineer originally, I wouldn't have included as many deliverables as were included in the original contract.
Well, you just have three, don't you? 30, 60, and 90?
There's a 30, 60, 90, 100%, and a bid set. So there's a total of five different design deliverables.
It's not that unusual. Let's see here. So the likely outcome for the possibility that the design is delayed, it says here in this column, further delays in the start of construction of the conveyance facilities, the piping portion of the work, could impact the start of the wharf and delay compliance with the time schedule order. Mm-hmm. At what point in time will we know that this design work is far enough behind that it's going to impact
We know now. I don't have – so the critical path schedule does not show the completion of the pipelines currently on the critical path. So as you mentioned previously, we're trying to keep
like
the pipelines off of the
path
critical
now,
path.
Perhaps you could let him finish the answer. Multiple times you've interrupted him. Maybe he could finish and then go on with your question. Thank you.
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say that the pipeline is not currently on the critical path. So the if you can imagine the pipeline and the treatment plant are essentially on parallel paths. One doesn't really impact the other until we have a finished wastewater treatment plant that we can't start up and commission because we can't get wastewater to it. So at this point in time, we anticipate that the pipeline will be completed based on our current schedule before the water reclamation facility will be ready for startup and commissioning. So therefore, the startup and commissioning of the water reclamation facility at this point in time right now is not dependent on the completion of the pipeline. If we continue to have delays and push out the design and construction of the pipeline, then we could get into a situation where the water reclamation facility is built and it's sitting and ready to be tested, start up and tested, but we can't get wastewater to it. At that point in time, as I mentioned, that our current schedule shows us about being ready for substantial completion about 325 days prior to the TSO compliance date. So we still have about 11 months of float in our schedule.
I got to tell you, I'm confused because I'm looking at this column and it says further delays in start of construction. You're showing July 2020 as the start. This is for the piping. Could impact the startup of the wharf and delay compliance with the time schedule order. So maybe we're not there yet, but my question to you is, if we had a critical path schedule, it would show me when we're at that date.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea if that's tomorrow or 3 months from now.
Yeah. I have that information I can provide.
Okay. Easements we talked about. So your language regarding the easements is your action to overcome the challenges relative to the easements is to work closely with Vistra, PG&E, PUC to obtain the easements. What does it mean to work closely with them?
I would refer to Mr. Collins and Mr. Neumeier about some of the discussions around the easement acquisitions and some of the sensitivity around those.
Okay.
Currently, right now, the city is right now in ongoing discussions with both Vistra and PG&E to acquire the easements. And if we wanted to discuss that in closed session, given that it's subject to litigation, we could do so.
Well, I think it's important that it be on the critical path schedule, first of all. If it needs to be discussed in closed session, that's fine. But I'm very concerned about it. I'm very concerned.
Do you have a question?
It's a question now. Okay.
That's a discussion item, and that's appropriate for then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The question is, why hasn't this been resolved sooner? I mean, the pipeline route has been established for, 2 years?
The City Council formally adopted the pipeline route in February of 2019.
If I could address the easements again.
Sure.
The easements that we're seeking are owned by private parties. And we right now are in discussions with them to purchase those easements, and we're pursuing all avenues of securing the easements. And again, the rest of the issues involving the easements would be an appropriate subject for closed session.
Okay. So in the likely outcomes column here for this issue, it says delayed receipt of the easements may actually complicate or delay construction, which will lead to us missing the TSO completion date. So it's back to the same thing I'm not comfortable with, but no critical path schedule. I don't know if that's going to happen tomorrow or 2 months from now. So let's see here. General table 7 on page 72 with general project activities cost. There's a very little teeny footnote at the bottom of that, footnote number 3. The font the size is about 2. But I see here that Corolla's projected estimate to complete the entire program has increased by 30%. Can you, from the number that you gave us in April of 2018, can you tell me how or why this, your management fees, your projected management fees are 30% higher than what they were less than 2 years ago?
We discussed this in detail back when we brought amendment, or the city staff brought amendment number 2 for our contract to council. There are a couple different reasons. One is the some of the continued involvement from some of the other members of the program management team that are no longer participating on the program management team. So there was a chunk of effort that was set aside for them that is no longer being done. And I'm trying to think of some of the other reasons that we discussed back in. That's the other is there's in terms of the construction schedule. Thank you, Rob. We had anticipated that a lot of the construction management activities for the conveyance facilities and the recycled water facilities, i.e. the injection wells, would occur concurrently. And as shown, the recycled water facilities have pushed out because of some of the delays on the hydrogeo work. So those are two of the major reasons why those costs have increased.
Okay.
Those projections have increased.
So in looking at this number, I'm not sure that I understand that, to be honest with you, Eric, but 30% increase. But I'm not going to go into it anymore at this point. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions to my left? None? Okay. Eric, thanks. A couple questions for you and then potentially Scott. The red-legged frog issue, as I understand it, had an added requirement that was due to the WIFIA loan and was secondary to a federal level review, the EPA primarily. And is that really the lead agency that not has caused but has been involved in negotiations with Fish and Wildlife and really is handling the timeline schedule for that issue?
Yeah, that's correct. Based on timing, if we would have, you know, we're obviously working with both WIFIA and with the Clean Water State Revolving Fund Program. It's the state revolving fund, but they receive federal dollars, so they're subject to the same requirements as WIFIA. So either one of those agencies could have been the lead agency. The fact that we're so much ahead in the process with WIFIA made them the lead agency to deal with the service.
Just a couple of corrections, I think, and these are minor details, but in reading through page 83, I believe on the top 6.1 construction summary, second sentence is February 2020, not early February 2019. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I want to make that note in case anybody saw that and questioned that. And then page 87, another, I believe, correction. Just to make sure that it's publicly vetted, if I can get there. The 8.13 current progress, I believe that's November 2019, and the 8.14 is really the February 2020 date. Is that correct?
You're referring to section 8.1.3?
Yes, page 87 on the report. Current progress anticipates delivering the 90% program deliverable in February 2020.
Yeah, that's correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and then the 90% submittal in November 2019, shouldn't those be the same date?
That's correct, yes. That second date should be the same.
Not to be picky, but you know, this becomes a public document.
The February 2020 date is the correct date, and November 2019 was the
date. So 8.1.4 should be February 2020 as well.
Right.
And then the new table, since we didn't have, I don't believe, the presentation overheads, I believe you're referring to page 93 as the new table that is being requested by CFAC. Is that correct in our agenda?
Yeah, I believe so. I was looking at my copy of the report, yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure everybody understood that that was the ask that was being asked by CFAC members. And let's see. Mr. Collins, question for you, sir. Do council members have access to you to ask detailed questions regarding this project and its format and or any information regarding the WRF, and do they seek your counsel routinely?
Yes. We make ourselves available at any time before agenda items are posted or after to answer, you know, mundane questions to the very high level to the in the weeds discussions, and certainly try to make ourselves available to each council member.
Do you have an opportunity to meet routinely with every council member on a monthly basis or every other week basis or weekly?
I try to at least a couple times a month, yes.
You try, but sometimes not.
Well, my schedule is open to meet with each of you.
I see. Yeah. Mr. Casares, you're available also routinely for questions regarding WRF issues on a routine basis, any time a council member would need to vet that?
With some advance notice, yes, I can be available, yeah.
Okay. And so if we wanted to have further detail or access to further detail, we would simply contact you as program manager and you would make that available to us.
Yes.
And then, Mr. Collins, this report, as I recall, the WRF quarterly report format was approved by the City Council, and the contents of the existing format were previously vetted by the City Council and approved, correct?
Yes, I think maybe with one modification made a few months after it was initially vetted by the council.
Right, and this report has been presented numerous times in this format, correct?
That and the quarterly and then the monthly, which is presented, I believe, every second council meeting of the month.
Right, and so the only addition or change to this that you're asking for now is the new table as recommended by CFAC.
That is what we're bringing forward, CFAC's recommendation, and we believe it could help clarify some issues.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have no further questions. I'll open up public comment for item C1. Any members of the public wishing to come forward on item C1, please do so now.
John Weiss, business owner and resident in Morro Bay. I want to commend the previous council and staff were obtaining low-cost loans and hope, with the hope of reducing the cost for Morro Bay ratepayers, which I am one twice. In the public, I'm often asked about how the water rates might be reduced, so I hope that that will in fact happen. I'd like to ask a question relating to the three 218s that have already been passed and to have affirmed by mayor and council that they are sufficient funding for the current project that we have been talking about tonight. I believe there's a contingency fund, and so I'm hoping that there will be an affirmation that that will happen. I do note that there is nothing that I see budgeted for the demolition of the old plant, and I wonder if that's going to, in fact, take place within that budget of $126 million approximately. I'd also like to ask another question, which is, has the plant that is being submitted in the quarterly review been resized or sized for the fact that Cayucas will soon not be using our outfall, which has been using 25% of our usage? I'd also like to ask what I think a reasonable rate player would say, which is about the current project being within the budget. Is it still true that there will be the possibility of a water rate reduction? Because this has certainly been alluded to not that long ago. Also, I just heard, and I want to make sure I understand correctly, that the plant could be built and not have the ability to bring the pipeline to the plant, which concerns me as a ratepayer. So I hope you have time to answer those questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Public comment is still open for item C1. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you, Betty Winholtz. Some of these are comments. Some of them are questions. As I listen to the report, you've talked a lot about the red-legged frog, but where is the goby and the snail in this process? Are they no longer of concern? I'd like to know about that. It seems to me that the need for the $13,500 for a person to keep the record straight kind of falls under the responsibility of the program manager. And it seems to me, and I don't mean it personally, but if that job hasn't been done correctly, then that money should come out of his salary, not out of our water fees. Also, I find the title of this report called Water misleading, because it's really about our sewer plant and the water. And so is that just for PR sake that we mislead people by the title of the report? I think when you're asking about putting in the table for a CFAC that they're requesting, could you also include this critical path document into the next report, as Councilmember Heller has said? So that's two things that would change. I can't tell you which table it was in, but in one of them I read that the conveyance contract starts at say, ground zero, and then it doesn't say it's going to be completed for 2.5 years. Am I misreading that it's going to take 2.5 years to do the construction on the conveyance? And just as a layperson, I'm not understanding how PWAB is going to fulfill WRFCAC's responsibilities, because they do not have the expertise that they had, and maybe that's what you're looking for. I don't know, but it doesn't seem effective or efficient. Also want to comment that this is the first the public has heard that you've actually acquired the property, and I'm wondering how and why that's been delayed and why we didn't know about that before. Or that was in happening. That may be all of my questions and statements. And just let me say that though many of you ask many questions, and that may seem tedious to some of you, it's really helpful to the public. So I hope that you don't stifle each other and think that you have to ask questions behind the scenes, because we don't even know that. We don't know what questions need to be asked, and so to hear the answers and the questions is really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment for item C1 is open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome, Dan.
Hello, my name is Dan Sadley. I live in Morro Bay. I see the staff and the city council with the papers that are up on the screen, but those of us that have 20/20 vision can't read most of the charts that are up there. And unlike what used to happen, there used to be those in the back that we could take and have that we could actually read. This time they're not, and so it's not as transparent as it has been in the past, and I would ask going forward that continue to happen. Secondly, really I'm shocked by the interruptions to Mr. Heller, because I want to restate what Betty has said. I find his questions illuminating. I find them interesting. They're things that I haven't heard before. Some I have, but the public has a need to know about this project. And when that question process is stifled, like you have to ask behind the scenes of Mr. Collins or the city attorney or Mr. Caceres, then the public doesn't know the answers. And the public has the right to know those answers, and he's just asking those questions, not only for his own benefit, but primarily for the public. And I would encourage that he not be interrupted in doing that process for the benefit of all of us.
That's part of the code of civility. It's part of civil discourse. It's part of educating the public and transparency. The elephant in the room for me, this whole project, is deep well infusion testing. There's so many reports that say that there's not sufficient water aquifer for this recycling component to work, which this whole thing has really been circling around. The DUDAC report of 2012 says we have insufficient aquifer that's too thin. It can't intake all of that water. It can't do it. There's other reports that say it as well. So the delay of this test really is the white elephant in the room. Can this even work at all? We don't know, and we're running towards a wall that we may smash into, and it really needs to be expedited one way or another. It is the critical test far beyond what the frogs are. I mean, the biological thing is important. I'm not diminishing that. But the deep well infusion test says, is this going to work? Are you spending $126 million on the king's invisible clothes? We need to know, because without it, we have no project. We have to start it over again, completely. Deep well infusion test, make it a priority, make it happen, because you have no project otherwise. You have no loan process otherwise. So it has to say it does work. Show us where it works, how it works. He's talking about different locations. I'm good with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is still open for item C1. Anybody wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome, Linda.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. At the top of page 59 of the agenda, C1 staff report, it says, all components of the water reclamation facility project are currently in progress. Each report since March of 2019 has said the exact same thing. There is no apparent progress being demonstrated since the project is currently on hold. So how can they keep saying this? How long can this be said before the City Council realizes that the project is not progressing at all and the public is just being fleeced? Each schedule that has been prepared for the project since January of 2013 has yet to be honored. Originally, the city was going to have an operating facility in 5 years. It has now been over 7 years, and construction hasn't even commenced. Table 4 on page 69 of the report indicates that as of the end of December 2019, the total expenditures to date has been $15.5 million. And according to footnote 4, this does not include invoices from the design build team or the program manager. According to the monthly report ending in October of 2019, the total expenditures to date was then $14.5 million, but only $47,064 were expended in December of 2019. So how is it now $15.5 million? There is roughly $850,000 unaccounted for. Who is watching over the public's checkbook? There, on table 13 on page 75 of this report, lists the TSO milestones that were imposed by the CCRWQCB in June of 2018. The city has failed to meet any of the deadlines, so is the city presently subject to fines by the regional board, and will they be considered as project expenditures? Table 15 on page 81 of the report indicates that $4.8 million were obligated with the notice to proceed of design for the WRF, but has surpassed that amount by $1.4 million, and the design is not yet complete. Subtracted from the total guaranteed maximum price amount of $67,234,512, it leaves approximately $61 million remaining for the WRF construction and completion of the design. Since the 12-month period in the design-build contract has elapsed and several change orders have been added to the cost with more on the horizon, the WR construction alone will certainly be much more than $61 million remaining. The contingencies that are being spent down were supposed to be for the construction phase but are already being run out due to the design and program management. I find it impossible to believe that the final price tag for the project will remain at $126 million.
Thank you. Public comment for item C1 is still open. Any member of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, City Council, staff. I just wanted to raise some concerns. This can get out of hand very quickly. I appreciate Councilman Heller's questions. You know, he's on top of it. I don't know if you guys are doing it behind the scenes or not, but you got to stay on top of this. Change orders come quick, man. You don't know what the future, you know. So I appreciate him, and I just wanted to lend my support. And I think the other council members should be more involved. That's what it looks like from back here. Yeah. So I don't know if you're just doing it behind the scenes, and I'm not seeing it. And I come to a lot of the meetings, so thank you very much.
Public comment for item C1 is still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Welcome.
Hi, Melanie Williams-Mahan. I wish I could understand why the city is asking for more money to hire staff to help with this project. With a large amount of funds going out already, why are we paying another employee to work for us? Don't we pay CATS already? Aren't they responsible for community outreach? 60 PRA requests over recent months doesn't seem overly large to me, but I don't know. If there was more transparency, people would know what's happening without having to pry it out of the city. And I'm going to read something. This is the motion and resolution for the approval of this coastal development permit. On page 21, oops, sorry, let me get in here. Under other authorizations, number 13 at the bottom of the page, prior to construction of the WRF, the permittee shall provide to the executive director written documentation of authorizations from the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Board and the State Water Resources Control Board, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the California State Lands Commission, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, or evidence that no such authorizations are required. So I'm just wondering if we have that documentation as to why we did not think that evidence was required from Fish and Wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment for item C1 still open. Any members of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council for discussion. Anyone would like to lead us off?
Would you like some of these questions answered by staff first?
I can certainly do that, yeah. There was about 55 of them. Let me go ahead and do that. I did write them down as best as I could. Perhaps quickly, let me start with Mr. Weiss's comment regarding 218. Do we have sufficient funding with the 218 process and to complete the current budgeted project? Jen, maybe you could address that. Or Eric, either of the two.
The rate study that was done for the Proposition 218 ballot or vote was sufficient. The rates were sufficient to support a $126 million project, and that was based on conventional bond financing and assuming a WIFIA loan at an interest rate above 3%. And we know that we'll likely get an interest rate below 3% for WIFIA once we sign those documents. The interest rates right now are in the low 2%.
Mr. Collins, a question regarding the process for rate reduction and the conversation council has had around that, especially given the fact that we have had significant reductions in anticipated debt service.
Yeah, good question. We talked to council about this about a year ago, or a little over a year ago, about a kind of a rate review policy, and this would only in the instance where there's an ability to reduce rates or to collect less than the authorized amount, which is the $41 for the wharf surcharge. The WIFIA is about to be locked in. As was noted in the staff report last council meeting, that equates to about a $28 million savings in debt service compared to conventional loans, a significant savings that's going to help keep those rates at the level that they're at or potentially below. Once we get SRF completed, which will fall in the coattails of the WIFIA because all the work that's required of WIFIA is also required of the SRF, it's potentially up to $32 million more savings compared to conventional loans for ratepayers. So in total, about $60 million potentially. That is a big reserve that provides float, if you will, in the rates. So I understand the importance of managing to the $126 million amount for the project, and we are going to do everything we can to stay within that guardrail, but there is significant float in the rates. If, in fact, we go over that, it will not impact what the ratepayers experience. We're hopeful, on the flip side of that coin, we're hopeful that with SRF being completed soon and around the same time, hopefully, we're getting into contracts for construction of the remaining portions of the project, that we'll be able to do a significant analysis to bring forward potential for collection of less than the full amount, authorized amount for rates. That would probably occur sometime in the mid-year of 2020.
And the question about demolition, currently that is not included in the budget. Is that correct?
Correct. The $126 million budget does not include demolition of the site.
And reason being is that there's still a lot of work to do. That's further out in the future after the project is complete. We also have joint ownership with Cayucas on that, so that will be subject to negotiation with them to help cover, you know, up to 40% of the cost of that. So those are future discussions. And with there being ability to cover capital costs outside of the wharf project because of the rates, that could be conceived as a year five or beyond project that could be addressed with the existing rates.
Thank you. And the question regarding the plant being right-sized for the loss of Cayucas flows, could you just reiterate the fact potentially that that is a yes?
Yeah, that's correct. The wharf has always been sized since 2017 for essentially the Morro Bay flows only. I believe Mr. Weiss might have been talking about kind of the outfall impacts if Cayucas isn't using the outfall. That's one of the things, as you remember, that we're going to be looking at in our outfall management plan is what are the impacts of Cayucas not being part of the outfall potentially in the future and a number of different other different scenarios.
Thank you, Eric, for that. And Ms. Weinholz talked about the concerns regarding snail and other species. Were there other concerns?
Yeah, so there were initially three species that that the EPA had made a determination on, and at this point in time, the Fish and Wildlife has asked us to add an avoidance measure, some standard avoidance measure language for the tidewater goby that we will likely be adding. But the goby, barring that avoidance language, and the shoulder band snail are not an issue. And the focus at this point in time is clearly on the red-legged frog.
Okay, and are you purposely misleading people by the title of the report? That was a question.
I am. I'm trying to exactly understand.
I think it was our water. Is that?
Oh, correct. That's one of the things that we've talked about in terms of the new branding for the project or the program. The Our Water logo was something that was developed by our public outreach consultant, and we included that in the report.
Okay, and then conveyance construction timeline. Ms. Weinholz wasn't sure if that was 2.5 years. There was a question about that and the duration of that.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure we were looking at exactly the same thing. The version that I'm looking at of the report, and I'll look at the one in the staff report to make sure it's the same, but the construction duration is roughly 18 months. In this current schedule, it's July of 2020 to December of 2021.
And then she made mention of the fact this is the first time she's heard that the property has been purchased or acquired, which is true. This is the first time we've actually announced that it has been acquired. But the question had to do was what was the delay in consummating that deal? Or was there a delay in consummating the deal according to your project and your timelines?
We're referring to the Tri-W property.
Exactly.
I'm assuming, Rob, if you want to answer that,
Sure. We had estimated that escrow would close somewhere around December 22nd. The Tri-W property owner was not available for signing of the deed over to the city until after the first of the year. So as soon as they got back into town, executed that deed. We funded the project, I believe, on the 22nd of December. So we're just waiting for their signature on the deed.
And that had been reported previously, that delay in a number of, I remember hearing it in a number of council meetings previously. Yes. And then the question about handouts not being available, I'll just answer that I agree with Mr. Sedley's comment. I didn't have the presentation either. I can't see it, and it would be nice, staff, if we could have all presentations prior. So thank you for that comment. Also, the elephant in the room, Mr. Sedley indicated that there are other reports that say IPR cannot be done. Could you just comment on that? And I know you talked about the status of IPR and the easements that are necessary to complete the testing, but that is a concern that's being raised.
There is only one report that I'm aware of, and I believe it's the DUDEC report that talked about the ability to do potable reuse via groundwater injection. All the other reports that have been developed by registered hydrogeologists show that it is feasible to do injection at both the west and east injection locations that were included in the city's environmental document.
Okay, and then some questions about Table 4, page 69, expenses being $15.5 million. And on a previous report, being $850,000 less, quote unquote, where is the $850,000? It appears to be unaccounted for.
So that money was expended, and you can see that detail in the reports that were developed for October. We did not develop a November report because we did not have a November meeting second meeting of council in November. But that money is accounted for. The presentation jumped from quarter to quarter. And there weren't a lot of expenditures in December because of the timing that we had to prepare the December report, and we hadn't received invoices from the program manager, shame on me, and design build team as well.
Table 13, page 79, are we subject to fines now given the fact that the project completion dates have, quote-unquote, my quote, slipped?
TSO is clear that the city needs to meet both the interim and final deadlines. Now, we have fallen behind on some of the interim deadlines, but we have been fully transparent with the regional board, actually met with the regional board this morning to give them an update and overview of the project, and have been regularly meeting with them throughout 2019 on a number of different items as they relate to the project.
Just to add to that, as with our previous consent decree, the interim schedule milestones are only assessable as fines if we fail to meet the final TSO date. So we fail to meet that date, they go back and assess all those interim penalties. If we meet the final date, they don't assess any of the interim dates.
Good. And then page 83, guaranteed not to exceed costs because of process change orders, et cetera, unlikely to be met. Could you just comment on that again? I know you did in your report with regard to PCOs, et cetera, that are remaining.
Yeah, I think the comment was specific to kind of the design budget. So we, not arbitrarily, but in the proposal that was developed by the design build team, they had identified an estimated cost for their design as part. So their total construction, their total agreement, let's call it $67 million. They identified $5 million of that for design. And really, there is no, there is nothing in the agreement that says their design is $5 million and the rest of it's $62 million. It's in total $67 million. We break it out on the program level to help with predicting cash flow and making sure that our cash flow models are as accurate as possible. And so that's the reason why we break out that $5 million. So just because they've gone over budget, quote unquote, gone over budget on the design, it does not have any impact on the GMP at this point in time.
And Ms. Mahan's question, I don't have a copy of the CDP before me, but regarding authorization from the agencies that are necessary, we are aware that We do need approval from Fish and Wildlife, and we also are aware of all the requirements for the CDP.
That's correct. The agencies like the Army Corps of Engineers, Regional Board, State Board, NIMS, we've been working with all of them, and State Lands Commission, we either have letters or emails from them indicating that that no permit is required, and that information will go to the Coastal Commission once we finalize this process with Fish and Wildlife.
Thank you for that. Now, I'll bring it back to Council. And thank you for great questions, by the way, and thank you, staff, for answering those openly. I'll open it up for discussion.
So, Mr. Mayor, may I make a suggestion? Because there are four items under this C1. Can we take them one at a time
sure.
and discuss
them? Sure, good suggestion. Okay. Yeah, why don't we go ahead and do that? Why don't we start with the WRF? This is a receive and file, but the WRF Capital Project Quarterly Report, and maybe take the CFAC recommendation to modify first.
That's combining two things.
Pardon me?
Sure. That's combining two things.
Well, you want to take just the one?
I would.
Okay,
no,
well,
like
I'll just start with the receive the WRF Capital Project Quarterly Update Report.
Okay.
Discussion.
Who wants to discuss? I'd like to discuss. So I think first of all, I'd like to apologize.
Hold on. Councilmember Addis started, so I'm just going to allow her to continue.
I'd like to move that we receive and file.
Second.
Okay, so there is a motion to, doesn't mean we can't discuss, by the way. There's a motion by Councilmember Addis to receive and file the WRF quarterly report, seconded by Councilmember Davis. And I will have first and a second, and I'll open it up for discussion.
Okay, thank
Thanks.
You.
Yeah.
So first of all, Eric, I'd like to apologize for speaking over you. I get kind of wound up about this stuff. Partly because it's a heck of a lot of money on the line here, and also because I've served on oversight committees and I've worked for firms like Carollo and been in this business a very long time, and I get really, really uncomfortable when things just kind of seem to linger along, and that's the sense that I get about this project, and adding a critical path schedule will certainly help me. The other thing that I want to make very, very clear, which I've talked about, at least in my mind, for a very long time, that I really think that a 45-page report, which frankly is a lot of the same information presented in different ways, is kind of an overkill. And I'm wondering if, I mean, there's a cost associated with reporting, and I'm not going to ask you for what the cost of this report is tonight, but what I would like to ask is that by the next meeting when the report is presented, that we know what the cost is to the city for these reports. I know they must take a lot of time to prepare. That's all I want to say about number one.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or discussion?
Yeah, I would just like to add that we did, when we first saw this report, had a lengthy discussion. In fact, I think it took several meetings, and we sought input from the advisory boards as well to ask what people wanted to see in this report. And we have modified it before, and the question that I always ask, and I am the liaison to the CFAC committee, so I can fill you in on what they have had to say about it, is that we don't want it to cost any more money. And so we have always been assured that this is, once we settle on the format, it's a standard format and it doesn't cost a lot of money to plug the numbers into it. In that regard, I want to say that CFAC actually did consider, especially one member, getting the critical path information into the report, and Eric actually produced for them the document, and they looked at it and said, oh my gosh, this is way too much information. So they basically went back to thinking that having the milestones in the report was the critical things that they wanted to see, along with any explanations for why we might not have met them. So just to add, you know, and Eric certainly said to CFAC members that if they wanted to come and look at this detailed document of the critical path, they could, but that it was, they agreed it was too much to include in the report. So I just wanted to add those comments to the discussion.
Good. good. And I'll just add to the discussion that, and the gentleman in the back, I forgot you didn't announce your name. I know you come all the time, but my apologies. Your comment about questions being vetted for the public is an important one. You should know that Councilmember McPherson and myself sit on the WRF subcommittee appointed by the council. We meet every other week for a number of hours with program management and staff, city manager. We review not only this report, but every detail of cost changes, costs, project schedule, issues regarding compliance, etc. And we give guidance to what we think the public would want to be made aware of in terms of knowing what the project components are. And so our guidance often comes during those meetings to suggest that during the presentation you get the detail that you do so you have sufficient information to understand the project. This is a huge project, and I could imagine if you don't attend every meeting, and even if you did and you weren't involved in the middle of every discussion, it's hard to follow all the moving parts. And so thanks for the comment. I appreciate that. We do not often repeat a lot of the questions that have previously been asked that have been included in the presentations that we ask for staff to bring forward as a matter of transparency. I just wanted to make that comment for Councilmember McPherson and myself who sit on that subcommittee. With that, I support the motion, and I'll call the question. Roll call vote, please.
To clarify, Mr. Heller asked if we could bring back a cost estimate for creating these reports.
Well, the motion is to receive and file, and there's been a second on that, so we'll vote on the motion.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
The motion carries 5-0.
With regard to review of the recommendation from CFAC to modify the WRF project quarterly update report, adding that table that you saw, again, I'm not sure what page it was on. I could look really quickly and find it for you.
93.
Page number 93 of the agenda. I'll entertain any discussion you might have or entertain a motion regarding
that. I'd like
that.
To move that we approve modifying the WRF Capital Project quarterly update report by adding that table on
Second.
Page 3.
Second.
So we have a motion by Councilmember Addis to approve the recommendation by CFAC, second by Councilmember Davis, and I'll ask for other discussion on that.
Yeah, I do have discussion on this issue. You know, my initial reaction was somewhat negative because I know that we spent a fair amount of time developing the report format and getting agreement on it. And I think that over time, you want the same elements in the report so that you can follow progress. And I should say, as the liaison to CFAC at the last meeting, they talked about possibly cutting the report down or shortening it or eliminating some tables. And I really wouldn't support that because we have a format that I think we've agreed on and we need to move forward with it. But I would like to personally also add a table to the report, and that's why I wanted to discuss this. I have been concerned from the very beginning that by focusing just on the $126 million project cost, we are ignoring the important issue that Mr. Weiss brought up, which is what really matters is what are the monthly rates to the ratepayer. And I would like to see us include a table in this that looks at how we are with each successive action that we may take, especially once these loans are approved, we actually show how much money we are saving in the rates. Now, we may not actually ask for that reduction at the time because we could do capital projects with it, but at least it would show that overall this project team has really managed this project by reducing the overall cost to the ratepayer. And I think that's important to show in the report itself. It could be a very simple, just a graphic, But I would personally like to see that because I think it's the important element that we somehow seem to forget when we focus on the $126 million figure.
Thank you, Councilmember McPherson. I'm going to stick with the motion with regard to the motion that was made and seconded, which is to receive the CFAC recommendation to modify it. And I'll come back to both Councilmember Heller's request and yours at the end, if that would be okay.
All right, sure.
Your cost request.
As far as discussion goes?
Cost. Your question on the previous item on cost. I'll come back to that.
Okay. Are we discussing item two at this point?
We are. And if you have comments.
May I?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So I'd like to commend the CFAC for what I understand is a consolidation of a number of tables into a single table, which kind of goes to the point that I've talked about in that I think there's a lot of redundant information. And the CFAC is doing exactly what the CFAC should be doing with respect to financial information. And I want to thank them for their work in that regard and suggestion item number two.
Great, thank you. And with that, I do support the motion as well, and I will call the question. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
And that brings us to item three, review and provide direction regarding the roles of PWAB and CFAC regarding the WRF project. Perhaps I'll start on this one with a little discussion. I really feel that the role of CFAC needs to be very specific and extremely importantly outlined in terms of what the expectations are of council. And I'm proposing that perhaps the global overview or oversight that was previously recommended be now revised to include the following duties and responsibilities. The first would be a review of global project expenditures versus budget variances. The second would be review of project change order costs and their appropriateness. The third would be to review debt service recommendations from staff, including use of cash or other funding sources such as WIFIA or SRF, and the impacts on ratepayers, bottom line, appropriate use of funds review. Number four, review cash flow performed to ensure we maximize use of funds available versus the time use of money. Five, monitor compliance with drawdown requirements of WIFIA and SRF funding or other funding sources as appropriate. What I was trying to get at was the detail really around their review, not only of capital project costs, but to include debt service cost review and the appropriate use of funds and make recommendations to council regarding the items that I have outlined. For me, it would be important, given the quality work that advisory body performs, to do that and to advise us of that. With regard to PWAB, my recommendation is the same as staff's, which I find on page 48 of the report. PWAB receives general updates from public works staff at each PWAB meeting, and those updates include general information about the WRF. The staff recommendation is that tradition should continue. In addition, it is recommended that PWAB also review major technical decisions that necessitate a recommendation to the City Council. I would agree with that staff recommendation and consider that an appropriate role for PWAB, and then the previous comments for CFAC. And with that, I'll open it up to discussion for those items.
Mr. Mayor, on the last recommendation, PWAB review major technical decisions, would you consider that PCOs would be part of that?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, do
I'll make a motion if you
like. No. I want to.
I was trying to hold off and do that.
Right, thank you. I personally think that PWAB is the advisory group that should review the PCOs, not the Citizens Finance Committee, because they can't judge the appropriateness of them. That's a technical issue of whether or not it's justified, and I don't know that I think that the PWAB, which, by the way, does have several engineers on it, we just appointed another engineer to that group. So they really do have the expertise to review the technical aspects of the project, and that's where I think that review should take place.
Councilmember Hillier, yes, thank you.
So my comments with respect to item three here is that neither the PWAB nor the CFAC have the technical background to review PCOs on this highly technical project. That technical knowledge was held by the WRF CAC. They've worked intimately on this project for 4 years. They know more in their little fingers about the technical aspects of the job than anybody on PWAB, new or previous, and certainly more than anyone on CFAC. The people on CFAC are extremely knowledgeable financial people. How are they supposed to assess a very technical proposed change order and its validity? I think ending the existence of the WRF CAC is absolutely the wrong time to do it. We will need the knowledge of the WRF CAC as we go into construction. I don't understand the logic. I don't think it was handled well by the council, and it's an insult, in my opinion, to the people who served on that advisory committee for many years and left the feeling that their advice really is no longer needed, when in fact it's needed now more than ever.
Thank you. Comments to my left, Councilmember Davis.
I'm concerned about the level of detail that you're proposing to add to the report, and I'd like to hear from staff an estimate of time involved to add those elements.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis.
Well, I would support the reallocating of duties for the various roles. I would be fine with PWAB reviewing major technical decisions, including the PCOs, and the rest left to CFAC. So I support that. I could see adding the information that you're asking for. I'd like to know from staff as well.
So I think it's a good question. In terms of staff time, I always hate to overburden staff. I could review what I had suggested. By the way, I wasn't asking CFAC to review PCOs, but the costs associated with PCOs. I'm open to leaving that out if that's preferable. But review debt service recommendations from staff, including the use of cash versus other funding sources. And an analysis of impacts on rates. So in other words, use of funds or use of money. Review cash flow performance to ensure that we maximize use of funds vis-a-vis the time use of money. 5, monitor compliance with drawdown requirements of WIFIA and SRF funding. Perform global project expenditure versus budget variance analysis.
Maybe I can just try to answer Councilmember Davis's questions. With respect to the global project expenditures, I think the committee is already doing that currently, so there's no additional staff time. The items 4 and 5 that the mayor referred to regarding cash flow and monitoring compliance with the drawdown, that leads into our investment reporting that we do to the committee. It's important for us to monitor our cash on hand since the loans are reimbursement-based, so that all correlates with that workload function as it is, I think, and we've been reporting under the investment report where we've been with our planning loan submissions, so I think it falls in line with that. I think any kind of debt service recommendations we would make would go we would naturally take in front of CFAC before bringing here, so I don't see that as an additional workload. I would ask for clarification on the change orders, even if it's just the dollar amount. if there is a maximum amount or a minimum amount, maybe given the timing, it's once a month, and maybe it would need to happen more frequently. But our city manager or project manager might want to weigh in on that.
But I'll withdraw that. I agree with my colleagues. I don't have a big deal with that. So I'll just withdraw that from my recommendation. The oversight of PCOs. Yeah.
I would just like to also point out that the CFAC just reduced the number of meetings that they're going to have from 9 to 7. So my concern would be, can they accomplish all of that? I know that when we originally talked about transferring the fiscal oversight to CFAC, it was at a very high level, don't get into the weeds, high level, second pair of eyes on it. You know, if you think about the history of this project, initially we had trouble knowing what was happening with the finances, but that was before we had Carolla come on board. And now that we have a very comprehensive and detailed report that we get every month and then quarterly, it kind of lessens the need for more direct oversights. But if it's not taking staff time, and if they have time for it, I guess that makes sense.
Thank you. Other comments? Okay. So I'll move that direction regarding CFAC role include review of global project expenditures versus budget. 2, review debt service recommendations from staff, including use of cash versus other funding sources, and analysis of impacts on rates. 3, review cash flow performance to ensure we maximize the use of funds vis-a-vis the time use of money. 5, monitor compliance with drawdown requirements for WIFIA/SRF funding period. And that the PWAB responsibilities include those recommended by staff in staff report on page 48. Period.
I'll second.
So motion by Mayor Hedding, second by Councilmember Addis, and any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for a roll call vote.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
No.
And Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
Motion carries 4-1.
Let's go ahead and take up adoption of Resolution 8-20, authorizing a budget adjustment for temporary part-time staffing to assist with records management. So
I move the council adopt Resolution Number 08-20, authorizing a budget adjustment for temporary part-time staffing to assist with records management for the project.
Second.
Tie goes to the runner. So a motion by Councilmember Davis, second by Councilmember McPherson for the staff recommendation for adopting Resolution 8-20. Any discussion? Yes, Councilmember Heller.
First of all, I'd like to thank our city clerk for all the PRAs that you deal with, and you do a remarkable job, in my opinion. I certainly understand your need for additional help on this. I like the idea that one of the folks here tonight suggested that perhaps the program manager take this support role on for you. I think we've budgeted $400,000 for public outreach to the program manager. It seems to me there might be some money in there to handle this function, at least to pay for it. So those are my thoughts on this item.
Thank you. Councilmember McPherson.
Yeah, I just want to point out that these public records requests go back well before the Carollo team was managing the project. So it would be very difficult for them to take on this role. Some of them go back to 2000 and some three, I think I saw one. Besides, they involve not just records that pertain to Carollo, which they would have control over, but also to all of the staff that's been involved in this project. So it really is going to have to be something that is done out of Dana's office, I believe. And so I don't see that I think Carollo is absolutely fulfilling their responsibilities for keeping track of all the records that pertain to their business on the project. So that's my comment. I support it.
I support the motion as well. I agree with Councilmember McPherson's comments. The administrative costs for the program management team to do that, I think, would be excessive, not be within the scope of what their requirement is. I have spoken with our city clerk and reviewed the magnitude of the PCOs, and it is taking away significantly from her other responsibilities as city clerk and delaying other important items and issues. To have this minimal amount of dollars allocated to assist in allowing this to happen, which there are legal requirements to meet these requests, I think is imperative. So I would support the motion.
And just to add, I think the point Councilmember Heller is making is just there could be cost savings to allocate towards this expense. And
sure.
One of the things we're looking at is how to sort of trim back on the estimates on the outreach budget, but we won't know what those savings are until you've gone through the exercise of actually going through the public outreach. But we are trying to find ways to cut those costs. But in the meantime, we do need to budget. We need to appropriate budget for this particular expenditure.
With that, I'll call the question. Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. And I just wanted to circle back. Thank you, Councilmember Heller, for your question regarding the cost to actually prepare the report. And I think it would be within the purview of the WRF subcommittee to get that answer for you and bring that back if you would be satisfied with that. We'll get that for you. And then the question about Councilmember McPherson about adding debt service, was that covered?
Just a table that actually shows the overall project cost and probably just tracking the amount that is going to be costing the ratepayer over time.
Perhaps that also could be vetted through the WRF subcommittee and brought back as a recommendation with the next routine report.
Okay.
That's
all
right. Would that be all right? If not, you could make a separate motion.
That's fine.
Okay. All right. That ends item C1. How are we doing? Biofluid break, or are you okay? Yes, biofluid break. About 3-minute biofluid break. We will be back at about 8:19 or thereabouts. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we are back. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to item C-2. If I could get everyone's attention, brings us to item C-2, approval of amendment number 2 to Far Western's contract and authorization for the Public Works Director to sign the agreement. I will turn it over to Mr. Leibig.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This item is before you to, as you stated, for a contract amendment authorization for Far Western for archaeological work anticipated with the program budget and identified in the draft EIR. It came out of the details of this came out of the programmatic assessment work that was done with the State Historic Preservation Office that requires delineation of potential archaeological resources along the pipeline route. So the archaeologists will be performing some borings to characterize those archaeological resources in conjunction with Native American monitoring. This was identified in the final EIR mitigation measure CUL for cultural -5, and the total amount of this amendment is $130,113.01. I'm not sure how they estimated it that accurately, but they have. It will be a time and materials contract not to exceed, so we'll only pay for that work performed. That concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions between Eric and myself.
Okay, thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. With that, I'll open it up for any council questions on item C-2. Looking to my left, any questions at all? None. To the right?
I just have
one. Yes, Council Member McPherson, please.
Thank you. Is this money that was budgeted in the project, or is this in the contingency, or I'm just wondering, is it additional work that wasn't planned?
We had money set aside within the budget for some of these environmental mitigations, and this one maybe went a little bit over what we had budgeted in there, but it's still within the contingency amount that we have in there. So we had an inkling of what this would include. The EIR indicated that we were going to have to do some additional investigation work. Didn't know exactly what that was going to be until we got into the nitty-gritty with the State Historic Preservation Office. It's not impacting the overall program budget.
Okay, thank you.
Great, and I didn't have any questions. With that, I will open up public comment. Public comment is open for item C-2 on the agenda. Any member of the public wishing to come forward, please do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment and bring it back to council and I'll entertain a motion.
I move that the City Council approve and authorize the Public Works Director to sign agreement number 2 to the existing amended agreement with Far Western Archaeological Research Group Incorporated dated December 1st, 2019 for continued archaeological support of the W Water Reclamation Facility project in an increased amount up to $130,809 and for an extended term through April 30th, 2020.
Second.
Motion by Council Member McPherson for staff recommendation. Second by Council Member Addis. Any further discussion or any discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Council Member McPherson?
Yes.
Council Member Addis?
Yes.
Council Member Davis?
Yes.
Council Member Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. That brings us to item number C-3, Visitor Center Relocation Opportunity. The recommendation is to receive the status update from our city manager regarding the potential opportunity to relocate the city's visitor center to 575 Embarcadero and provide direction as appropriate. Then I'll turn it over to Mr. Collins.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. I'll make this a brief presentation, really kind of give council and the community opportunity to weigh in. Ultimately, what we're looking for is just direction to continue pursuing this opportunity and not make decisions at this point. But ultimately, we have an opportunity to relocate the visitor center to 575 Embarcadero. This was a discussion last year with City Council. There was a sort of ad hoc group in the community that was formed to explore alternatives to the current location, which is right off of Harbor near City Hall. It's worked okay, but it's not ideally located. It's not on a main road, and it's not really where our visitors are at. And so there's been a lot of discussion about potentially relocating to where our visitors currently are. So we've seen a decline in the number of visitors who've come to the visitor center, which has nothing to do with the excellent service that's provided by the Chamber of Commerce. We contract with them for $50,000 a year to provide those services currently. But we all agree that there's more ideal location. The challenge typically is trying to find actually identifying a spot that's available on the market that works financially and such. So we do have such an opportunity at 575 Embarcadero. There's vacant space where the paddleboard company used to be. The TBID, or Tourist Business Improvement District, has discussed this. The Chamber Board has discussed this. Both are supportive of continuing to explore the opportunity. In fact, TBID has even discussed budget modifications to help address additional costs that would be rendered for the city, because there would be rents that would have to be paid. Currently, we don't pay rent at the Visitor Center because we own the building. And there may be additional staff required depending on how this whole thing comes together. So I'll just show a couple renderings. This is the 575 Embarcadero. This is just kind of a quick mock-up of what it could look like with signage, very clear signage that this is a visitor center. This is a highly trafficked area down in the Embarcadero. The docks are out there as well, so you can kind of make it more of an experience than just a place to stop for a restroom break and find cool maps. This can actually be part of your experience in the Embarcadero area. Since it is one of the most visited, if not the most visited place in SLO County, it would make sense to have your visitor center there as well. This, again, shows kind of the dock area. And what we're talking about is having, well, there already is a public restroom on the facility. There's on-street and off-street parking, which are ideal for visitor center locations. And you can see the little red arrow pointing to where 575 Embarcadero is. Again, the tourist-serving area, close proximity to a lot of restaurants, retail shops, and of course, the Rock. What we're looking at here would be a potential increase of $45,000 to the contract with the Chamber of Commerce, and that could be supplied through the Tourist Business Improvement District, which would not impact the general fund. We're looking at, if we wanted to proceed in this fiscal year, that there would be a remaining balance of about $20,000 or $21,000 to cover the rest of the year, and then up to $45,000 annually in addition to the $50,000. Again, the 50 is a general fund expenditure, but anything above that could be covered through TBID funds. And TBID is initially supportive of that. Of course, we need to kind of go through a process to discuss this and with a working group that TBID has formed and a working group that the Chamber has formed to look into the particulars and see if we can come up with something that works for all parties. We do need to act fast because this is a highly coveted spot on the Embarcadero, and there are folks who'd like to move in before the summer, so we would need to make decisions relatively soon. So again, what we're looking for is a discussion with council and to see if there's support for continuing to explore this and then bring it back for decision making in February, likely.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Appreciate that report. I'll start us off with questions. Have you considered pursuing a California Welcome Center designation for this site? And if so, what is the process for that, and what potentially could that bring?
Yeah, good point. The California Welcome Center is in Pismo Beach. It was operated by their TBID. Their TBID didn't want to take on additional rent costs and was going to forfeit that opportunity and visit SLOCAL, our kind of regional tourist business improvement district, if you will. You know, didn't want to lose that location in Slo County because that's the only one. And so they created kind of a bid for anyone to throw in their hat into the ring, and we actually did look at this location for that opportunity. But the board of Slo Cal ultimately decided to fund the location in Pismo Beach, again, under a different group, I think the Chamber group there. So we did put our hat in the ring for that, but it didn't pan out.
And have the numbers, through no fault of the Chamber of Commerce, of visitors coming to the visitor center declined over the last few years?
Yeah, and the numbers were as high as what they were before moving to that location. So that's a key piece of this, is just the location wasn't ideal to begin with, and there's been a sliding off. We have seen an uptick in visitors overall, which is a really good thing. It's just they're not coming to the visitor center. They're going down to, you know, the places like The Rock and the Embarcadero and downtown. And again, that's where, if you have a visitor center in that location, then folks can come in and understand other opportunities in Morro Bay, like North Morro Bay, you know, or the state parks or other areas where they can extend their stay where they otherwise might not be aware of. So that's where you want to grab them, is where most of them are.
Okay. And since this is a harbor lease site, I'm assuming that right now you're not looking at any concessions for rent or anything like that with regard to the center, or what are you looking at?
We would, it's under, the master lease is under somebody else, so we would just be a tenant. The visitor center would just be a tenant of that master lease holder, and the rent's about $1,650 a month, and then would have the restroom as part of that operation, which is nice because it's not a requirement for visitor centers, but it's certainly a nice thing to have, especially an ADA bathroom that's cleaned.
Good. Thank you. Other council questions?
Yes,
Councilmember Davis, sure.
Thank you. Do we have dedicated parking for this location?
We're looking into that with potentially the Shell shop owner. They do have parking, private parking, that we could potentially lease from. But we do have on-site parking just to the north of there, and then which would consider be kind of off-street parking. It's right there, but it wouldn't be dedicated specifically to the visitor center. It's just that there is parking in the area available. On heavily trafficked days, it may be hard to park right in front of it, but you could access it from a number of different parking lots.
Okay. When you say that you are investigating the possibility, does that mean someone has actually talked to Mr. Thomas and gotten any kind of commitment from him?
Still working on that. As part of the overall come back to council discussion in February, there's outreach being made. We just haven't had a chance to have a sit down on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the $1,650 per month, is that the the rate that the previous tenant was paying?
Okay. I'll just ask Jen Little, our tourism manager, to add to that.
Hello. Welcome, Mayor, City Council. Jennifer Little, Tourism Manager for City of Morro Bay. So I don't know what the previous tenant was paying. This is just what they're currently leasing it at, is $1,650 per month. It's not a triple net lease. That's their gross lease.
Okay, so that's what the master leaseholder is advertising it as?
Yes, correct.
So we would be paying fair market value?
Correct.
And we would be receiving fair market revenue for the Harbor Fund from the lease?
Correct.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thanks.
Okay. Councilmember Addis.
For that $1,650, what do you see as like the top three benefits besides the idea that it's nice to have a visitor center where visitors are going? Like, what would be the other sort of like top three big bangs for our dollar?
Yeah. I think that is number one. But then going down, the next would be the restroom. The next would be the proximity to a lot of other tourist-serving areas, and that's sort of the end of the Embarcadero that needs could use some investment and some marketing and attention. You know, that would be the next one. So I don't know if that's three, but I'd sort of put those in the top billing. And you know, I think
converting people to stay too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilmember McPherson, yes.
Thank you. So when you come back, would you come back with a detailed sort of budget of what it would actually cost? Because the rent itself is actually the smallest part of this number, so there's money included here for, I assume, some upgrades and remodeling and whatever, but you would be coming back to us with a budget?
Yes, that's the goal. I don't know if it's the first meeting or second meeting in February, but ultimately, like I said, it's the market is hot for this spot. So if we can't take it, somebody else will fill it, which is a good thing. But these opportunities don't come around often for the visitor center. So we would definitely want to have a detailed budget for TBID to look at, chamber, board to look at, and council to look at.
And have we talked to the leaseholder who would be leasing it so that he understands we're interested and
yes.
that he's kind of holding it?
He's hopefully. Not willing to hold it. They do have another possible tenant, but the other tenant is just for a one-year lease, and so he's hoping that if you all agree that we should keep looking at it, he's going to, you know, definitely take that into consideration.
Right, because this is a five-year lease, as
Correct.
I understand it. Yeah. And so when do you think would be the soonest that we could open it?
I would say April 1.
Really?
He's optimistic.
Yeah.
Before summer.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Mr. Green's letter, I know he suggested we should just move forward tonight, but his hope was that we could open by Memorial Day, and it sounds like that would be doable or possible.
I mean, the building is, like, ready to walk in right now. I mean, it's... You know, the walls are cleanly painted, and it looks nice. It doesn't need too much. We need signage on the building, and, you know, Chamber and us, we've been working closely together to figure out how this all comes together. And so
right.
we both have two ad hoc groups that are meeting and kind of formulating thoughts on how this all comes together. So we're moving forward on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is my last question. Obviously, if it's a visitor center, would you be located there also? I mean, there would be the visitor center staff that we normally have, but I'm just wondering who else would be housed in that office? Chamber?
The way we're looking at it is it's visitor center specific. You know, we don't there's not enough room to sort of run all those things.
Yeah.
And we want it to be a visitor experience and not, you know, kind of a cluster of a bunch of different things. And,
okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Jen. Oh, did you have another question, Councilmember Davis? Sure.
Sure. Do we have committed funding from TBID?
TBID has committed that they are open to look at $50,000 a year, putting this towards that. And I spoke with Jen Calloway that we do have. We're above our limit for our accumulation fund if we need to pull from that to do this.
For the initial year,
mm-hmm.
for the remainder of this year.
For this year, it would be like $20,000, yeah.
And then it becomes a budget discussion for next year. So we have to think about this as a commitment for next year as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So I guess what would the council be looking for from TBID? Their recommendation, their approval of the expenditure of the funds?
They don't approve funds. They recommend expenditures. So it would be probably recommending use of accumulation funds to kind of fund the remainder of this fiscal year. And then with that assumption that there would be a budget outlay for fiscal year 2021 to cover the operating costs moving forward. Because a lot of the initial costs will be sort of outfitting and signage and the things that are one-time in nature. The ongoing $45,000 would be a T-bend expenditure, so they'd also have to be recommending that they support that moving forward. Because you really don't want to just do for 3 months and then pull back.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of have to think of it as a commitment for 5 years.
So what you're looking for tonight from us is just an approval in concept for T-bid to look at it more closely and make a detailed recommendation back to us?
I would say that's really close to the mark. You know, TBID is excited about it, so is the chamber, but this ultimately is a council decision alongside the chamber, really. So is this something that you're willing for us to sort of move up in priority because we need to move quickly and use staff time to do that? This is one of the things that was flagged last year and also in the strategic plan for tourism. So
mm-hmm.
it does align with your goals. It's just sort of we're going to be spending, we got in a short period of time do a lot of work.
Okay, thanks.
So Councilmember Davis's question prompted one other, and I'll ask it directly then. Who would the management purview be under? If it, TBID funds funded, is that going to be managed by TBID?
It's still city managed, but it's contracted to the chamber.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Open it up for public comment. I have one speaker slip on item C-3. Erica Crawford. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. I don't have formal remarks. I would just say that our chamber is generally supportive. We are certainly interested in exploring the opportunity to maximize the productivity of our current efforts, serving visitors and retaining them and circulating them through our town to all four of our economic centers. We do have a small group, so our board considered this at their meeting in January. We have a small group kind of working on it, and they are going to be making a recommendation coming back to the board. We're moving expeditiously, for sure, because we're concerned about the timing as well, but also cautiously. We need to make sure that this works for everyone. So I think that's kind of all I have to say at this moment, but we're committed to kind of hitting maybe within 30 days of the first time that this was presented to us and having our exploration complete. So that's kind of where we are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Public comment is open for item C-3. Anybody wishing to come forward regarding this item, please do so now. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. This may surprise you, but I actually served on the Chamber Board for 7 years, 2003 to 2008, 2011. I remember when we were located in the boatyard, and it was very popular, and we had a bathroom, and that's also very popular. And I would encourage you to support this opportunity for the community because we are a tourist-based town, and I think that the location being proposed is certainly better than where we are. It's not quite as good as where we used to be at one time at where the boatyard is, but that doesn't have a vacancy. I know that in their case, they required a maritime theme inside the building because it is a boatyard, and I think there was actually a requirement as a leaseholder, which I think Eric Endersby would probably know a lot more about the detail of that, but I think it's a great thing, a great opportunity, something to consider, and I would support that. I do know that when it comes to the State Visitor Center, that this was something that when I was on the Chamber Board we looked at. The fact is we are not on the 101, and they probably will not consider a community that isn't for their location unless it's extraordinary. But that's a side note. Thank you.
Thank you. Public comment is open for item C-3. Any members wishing to come forward, please do so now. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. This is for direction. Input for staff, any inclinations, any recommendations?
Are you looking?
Receive status update and provide direction as appropriate.
I'd like to move forward quickly.
Thank you.
That would be my preference.
Yes, I agree.
I agree.
Councilmember Heller, any comments? Yes. This looks like we're all in agreement. Great idea. Great opportunity. Go for it. And we'll look forward to a report with the details outlined. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen, for being here. Thank you, Erica. That brings us to item number C-4, adoption of resolution number 09-20, authorizing submittal of an application for and receipt of alternative fuel and electric vehicle infrastructure grant. It's AB 617. Through the San Luis Obispo County Air Pollution Control District, or APCD, for the installation of 6 electric vehicle charging ports, and resolution number 10-20, authorizing submittal of an application for and receipt of a local road safety plan, LRSP, grant through the California Department of Transportation, District 5. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Leibick. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And for outlining these two transportation-related grants. that we bundled together. The first one is the APCD EV charging grant, which provides up to 60% of the costs of installing EV chargers. The two locations proposed for these EV chargers are on the Embarcadero, one near the South Sea Pier with four ports, and one near the North T Pier with two ports. We are looking at an estimated cost of installation at, let me get back to that item, excuse me, about $48,000, and the city share would be a little over $21,000. That includes, based on the bids that we have received, about $2,200 in the warranty costs. So the contribution would either come through financial contribution from the city, would come through cash and through in-lieu services, so or in-kind services. So we would be providing the labor to install these stations and working with a vendor to provide those charging stations. The location of the charging stations was based on where the city has power available to minimize the costs of bringing down a circuit from PG&E. So we have power pedestals at these locations to service those. And that's why those locations were highlighted. Not to say that other locations couldn't be used, but it would add to the cost of the project by having to basically come down from the PG&E service and install those power pedestals to serve those. The other grant, or do we want to stop for questions at this grant and then move on to the other grant, or should I just outline
both? We can take them together. Let's go ahead and finish. And
The Local Roads Safety Program grant is one that Caltrans is encouraging cities to apply for. The Local Road Safety Program will be a requirement of the highway safety funds in future grant years. So if we do want to apply for those, it will be required that we have this local safety plan. Also, it will make any other grant so we've been advised by SLOCOG staff, other grant applications more attractive to Caltrans by having this local safety program. This is a result of the basically the acronym has left my head, the Project Zero, where it's zero deaths due to traffic incidents. Try to reduce all traffic collisions to zero. And we'll be looking at where our problem intersections or segments are in the city, working with both the four E's of traffic engineering or traffic engineering enforcement education.
It's okay.
And there's another one there. But
you got plenty of acronyms in
there. So involvement, which is an I. Public involvement is definitely a component of this project. It requires basically a coalition of the community with public works staff, PD staff, to look at these problem areas, come up with this local safety plan, and we'd be presenting that to council and ultimately to Caltrans. This is a 90-10 grant, so 10% matching funds. This also allows for in-kind services to meet our grant match requirements. So Our staff time would be that portion that we would use. It's up to $72,000 in grants available, but it's really based on the cost of the project. Caltrans not going to it's a reimbursement grant, and Caltrans won't reimburse for any more than the cost of 90% of the project. So we will still have to develop the scope of that project before we know what the total cost of that is. But time is of the essence with this with the LRSP. I've been informed by Caltrans local assistance is the state has the capacity to fund five more grants statewide. So they're looking for us to submit that application if this should be approved tomorrow morning to get the grant application submitted. That concludes my presentation, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that. Councilmember Heller,
could you
start us off?
Could you tell me the locations again, Rob?
Near the South T Pier and the North T Pier for the charging location.
Okay, thanks.
On the west side of the Embarcadero in that parking lot.
Councilmember McPherson.
I always have a couple questions.
Sure.
Could you tell me a little bit about our current experience? We have two charging stations in town. How often are they used?
They're used on a relatively frequent basis. Those were funded by, a Department of Energy grant that installed those. They're not the best locations for charging. One is behind the Public Works Community Development Building, and the other one's in front of the chamber office.
Right.
I noticed the Public Works one is used generally occupied almost every evening, usually by the same vehicle, and it is charged. I know that there's generally a lack of charging stations on the coast. That's why we are encouraged by APCD staff to apply for this grant availability, and encouraged also to put the charging stations where folks with vehicles that are electric would be visiting Morro Bay. So the Embarcadero was their first suggestion that we should look down there for locations for those chargers. I'm not sure how often the chamber one is used. We should be able to get to statistics from the company that provided those, but it seems to be difficult.
Those are charging. I mean, you're charged to charge.
You are charged to charge.
Right, yeah. And just to clarify the amount for the grant for the charging stations, in the staff report it indicates two grants that total $21,200. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the APCD wanted a grant application for each, basically, point, so that we separated those out into two locations.
Okay, so one is for the four and the other is for the two.
Two, exactly.
But it's a total of 21.2, so the match would be some percent of that.
So the total construction, total cost, estimated cost for the charging stations is about 40. 1,000-ish. I have it in the
47.6.
Okay, so the rest would come.
Yeah, and then the city share would be 21,277.60.
Okay.
Would be the 40% plus the warranty, which is.
And some of that could be in kind.
Some of that can be in kind. The other source of funding that we would probably look towards is our parking in lieu fund for that, for improvements to parking.
Okay. And there's no other location in the city where you could place these charging stations that has the required power?
We could add another station to behind the Public Works Building.
Okay.
We could add near the Teen Center. They're just not really viable locations for charging. One thing that I need to highlight in there is the city's cost is also can be covered by the user fee. So our match amount will be paid back over time. We can't price ourselves out of the market, of course, so it'll be a small amount in that user fee that will reimburse whatever fund funds that those charging stations.
Yeah. Well, I think what I was thinking about was the downtown area. I was wondering if there was any place in the downtown area which does not have any where that was a possibility, but it sounds like that's...
Not on city property that we have access to.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Rob, just one question on the LRSP grant. That requirement in the future will be necessary for us to apply for grant funding for the 41-1 interchange project. Is that correct?
If we apply for state highway safety money, it'll be a requirement that. It'll be desired for any other grant funding. So it won't be a firm requirement of, for example, the SB1 discretionary funding. But it's, as we've been advised, it will make our grant application look better having this LRSP.
Great. Thank you. To my left, any questions?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
No, mine's a comment.
The LRSP, you're going to study problem areas where we have had incidents?
Yes. So we'll be using the Switris database along with community meetings to determine where the problem areas are.
The what database?
So CHP manages a database with all collision histories in there. So RPD reports collisions. And then that is a GIS-based, geographical information systems-based product. So we can plot those on maps, show what types of collisions those are, whether they're vehicles running into fixed objects, vehicle, pedestrian, car versus bicycle, and classify them that way so that we get a better understanding where those occur and how many of each type that we have.
Would these then support warrants for installation of traffic control devices?
They could. My analysis of intersections we've been asked to look at is on a intersection-by-intersection basis. Typically, we don't have the accident history at, for example, Pacific and Main. Mm-hmm. That comes up quite frequently, mm-hmm. that we need to install a stop sign on Main. There are collisions that occur there occasionally, but we don't have a chain of the five in the year that would mm-hmm. trigger that collision warrant, and we don't meet the volume warrants mm-hmm. on that intersection. So it will help with that to provide that good data on a geographic basis, and it can be used as an education tool to for public education on where problems do occur.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Questions? Okay. Great. With that, I'll open up public comment on item C4. Any members of the public wishing to come forward regarding this item, please do so now. Seeing none, I will close public comment, bring it back to council, and entertain a motion, and then we can have discussion.
I move staff recommendation, item C4.
Second.
Motion by Councilmember Heller for staff recommendation, second by Councilmember Davis.
Is it okay for us to just say that without reading all the words?
I do believe that's okay. Would you like me to read it, them to read it all, sir? Welcome.
That's why Bruce Gibson does it on the county board that I'm on.
For a resolution, you don't legally have to. For ordinances, you do.
Okay. So we're good. We're good to go. We have a motion by Councilmember Heller for the staff recommendation, seconded by Councilmember Davis, and discussion. Councilmember Addis, you had a comment?
I just want to say thank you on the EV charger grant, and I know we had some correspondence about parking and restricting parking, but I was looking up some information about the need for EV chargers because there's been a lot in the news about California's really increased production and consumption of electric vehicles, and they were saying in the next 5 years there's going to be 33% less charging stations, charging outlets, than there will be cars, and that California expects to put 1.5 million electric vehicles on the road, and we're not ready for it. And so I'm happy that we're moving forward with this grant. I hope that we get it. I'm glad Morro Bay is doing its part to be part of the solution. And the other thing I wanted to mention, just on the economic side, I know you mentioned there's very few chargers on the coast, and really it's incredibly few between the Bay Area and Los Angeles. There's like a couple, a few in San Luis Obispo now, and the couple that are here in Morro Bay, but I just think it's the right move for a coastal city at this time. So thank you for that.
Thank you, and I'll just add that as an APCD board member, I was proud to vote for this allocation and glad that the city of Morro Bay is taking advantage of this. The board considers it very important, and I'm sure we'll be very happy to see our application, and so I will support the motion.
And I just want to say, as the owner of an electric vehicle, I totally support the motion.
She seconds that emotion. Okay. With that, roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Heller.
Yes.
Councilmember Davis.
Yes.
Councilmember Addis.
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson.
Yes.
And Mayor Hedding.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. That takes us to item D, council declaration of future agenda items. Anything for the list, anybody? Seeing none, we will adjourn. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, February the 11th, 2020 at 5:30 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall located at 209 Surf Street, Morro Bay, California. Thank you and good evening.